Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Morris Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana El Bay. And this evening, we got some very important information for you. We want to start off with dealing with the educational system here in the United States. First of all, before we get into the broadcast, we want to answer the following question. Is the educational system in America designed to give your child correct knowledge? What are harbingers of doom? Will the Moors be victims of natural disasters? What are drones? What powers can the president assume? What countries are preparing to use drones? These and much more will be dealt with this evening. I want to say that I'm offering free articles tonight. The 14th Amendment Exposed, as well as the Commerce Game and How to Play, and Secrets of America. And where you access that, send me a email. Just say, Tahaka, send me them free articles you mentioned, and I'll send it right on to you. Send that to Tahaka53@hotmail.com. That's Tahaka53@hotmail.com, and I'll rush that right on to you. We have the most powerful library inside the United States. We are going to be adding this week about 23 different new articles to the library, books to the library. And so for those of you who already have the archives, just click on the Survival 2 link and everything will be right there. We're placing it all right there, and then we'll go on to the other links later, and we'll keep you abreast as new information is added to the archives. This thing is massive. It's designed for you, people of African descent inside the United States, for correct knowledge and what you really supposed to be knowing and what your children are supposed to be taught. Okay? So to access that, you simply go to TahakaArchives.org. That's going to be placed in the chat room. That's TahakaArchives, ARCHIVS.org. And we will you can access that, and then we can deal with that. As soon as you do that, though, however, call me so that we can guide you along. We can point out some things to you. We can be of some help to you if you're dealing with your banks or mortgage companies or insurance companies or bill collectors. If you're dealing with the police department, if you find yourself facing a lawsuit or you want to initiate one, give me a call at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we can get in there and help you out. Keep in mind that we're going to be in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, on the 30th and 31st of this month. And so for those of you who want to make it down there, we look forward to having you with us. We're going to be putting down some very, very heavy information So we look forward to you there. For information in regards to being there, you want to contact Mike Robertson L at 225-445-6018. That's Mike Robertson L at 225-445-6018. Also, on August the 16th through the 18th, we'll be hosting our Moorish Summit 2 right down here in Jacksonville, Florida. We will be in the Wyndham Hotel. So contact me at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we will help you out, give you directions, whatever it is, answer whatever questions that you may have. Now, we want to start off dealing with the educational system. Keep in mind, ladies and gentlemen, to dial into this broadcast, you simply dial 310-982-4184, and that way you'll be able to raise your hand if you got some questions, if you want to make a comment, and we'll recognize your hand, and that way you can get in here, okay? All right. For those of you who are on your social sites, if you're on Facebook, if you're on Twitter, Dig, StumbleUpon, LinkedIn, send me your friend request, and I'll go ahead and grant that. Just send that to Tahaka Amana L. Bay, and I'll grant that. That'll give you access to me and all the different things that we are doing and the educational materials that we are posting for you in the information so that we can be of help to you inside this country. Okay? Now, we're going to start off here this evening dealing with the educational thing, and then we're going to go down into the rest of the broadcast. And the chat room is open, so feel free to post any comments that you may have right there in the chat room. Okay? So you all sit tight and let us get in here and see what this thing is all about, okay?
When you study the history of many of America's economically elite families, from the Rockefellers to the Morgans, et cetera, and so forth, you will find that one of their very first interests was to control the process of education. One of their very first interests. A lot of people don't know that some of the first educational foundations established in America were established by America's ruling elite. Why? Because in order to prevent war, civil war, you have to control the minds of the children. Because
okay. All right. That's in a nutshell. That's very, very important for us to understand. And but that brings us to a question. Why, okay, you say you want to prevent civil war, and you feel that you have to control the minds of the children. You cannot allow the children to have a free mind and give them correct understanding and instill in them all the information that they need to know about their culture and their story, so you have to control the minds. And
we turn now to a big story in education. Think of all the American presidents in your lifetime who've said their goal is a quality education for every American. Well, tonight there's new evidence this country is falling far short, dangerously short, in just the number of Americans graduating from high school. The one number that jumps off the page is this one. Only 47% of this nation's black males graduated from high school in the 07-08 year. Again, that's just one number. It's a crisis big enough to trigger real fears of two separate American societies, those with an education and those without. Our report tonight from our education correspondent, Rahima Ellis.
More than half the nation's black male students will not graduate from high school, according to a report by the Schott Foundation, a nonpartisan agency that tracks public school performance. Among the worst-performing public school districts with large black male populations, New York City and Philadelphia graduated only 28% of black male students in 2008. In Broward County, Florida, the number was 39%, Chicago, 44%, and Nashville, Tennessee, 47%. far below 78%, the nationwide graduation rate for all public school students, and 98% for private school students. The study's author argues it's not a matter of race, but resources.
When you look at the data and you look at the number of white males who are in poorly resourced districts like Detroit, you will find that the graduation rate for white males is only 19%.
But the study emphasizes black males are less likely to have access to early education, highly effective teachers, and resources like tutors and well-stocked libraries. In Harlem, Jeffrey Canada has spent his career raising money to run his public charter school like a private school.
We can't afford as a nation to remove a whole group of folks from being taxpayers and actually put them as expenses for the taxpayers to have to pay for.
Success is happening in Chicago at Urban Prep Academy. The entire senior class in this all-black male public charter school graduated and all are college bound.
What we do at the school is we have an extended school day. We have an extended school year. We set high expectations. We give the students an opportunity and a pathway, a roadmap to meet those expectations.
And nationwide, governors in 48 states have agreed it is time to raise the Common Core standards for children at every grade level to make sure they're on track for graduation and beyond. Brian?
Kind of a national embarrassment. Ton of reasons why this has happened, but if you're watching this at home tonight, you're probably thinking, how can we possibly fix this?
The Obama administration has a plan, a contest they call Race to the Top. $4 billion they want to award to those states that do certain things. Link teacher pay to student performance, increase the number of charter schools, shut down failing schools, and actually adopt those core standards. They also say you've got to get student discipline under control and parents have to get involved. A student's report card should never be a surprise to a parent who's paying attention, not just at the end of the year, but at the beginning, right now.
Goes all the way to each individual home. Rahima Ellis, who covers education for us, thank you, as always. This topic will come up again with NBC News when we host the Education Nation Summit right here at Rockefeller Plaza. It will include a series of reports on this broadcast and others beginning September 26th, and the goal of this massive gathering is to try to figure out how best to improve education across this country.
Okay, my question is this. Okay, this is my question. How is it possible for the U.S. corporation, European society, to give people who they've once lynched, murdered, raped, pillaged, and destroyed an education that will empower them to become strong enough to rule this nation? How is that possible? And so we have another thing that we need to look at here. Let's take a look at this and see whether or not this was even possible. If the educational system is designed to empower you at all, let's take a look and see what we got.
School is an 18-year forced government training program that sterilizes the potential for brilliance in children, those who actually survive schooling and survive conformity and continue on to think for themselves, truly are a rare breed. All children start out as curious, highly experimental minds, and then one day they're sent to school. Mandatory schooling has never consisted of anything but the memorization of monotonous dead facts and training children to master repetitious behavior. For the greater part of their day, everything the child says must match the interest of their school teachers. Their behavior must coincide with a set policy and a set regulation. They cannot use the bathrooms without permission. If they wish to speak, they must raise their hands. And after every hour or so, a bell rings and everyone must move to it. It couldn't be any more slave-like. And this type of training becomes a ritual for the child. It becomes the plot background for their television shows and books, or the ideology taught to them by a teacher or a parent. An entire monoculture is being developed here, stripping children of their power to cause trouble for the state at an early age, training them to be good servants of the politically correct. Their environment is much like a prison, by the population lacking any ability to check the authority of the warden. the process becomes a matter of rubber stamping. They have no control over their entire lives, which is directly related to youth violence, because the only control they have is between each other. Mandatory schooling produces children who are either terrified of the tyranny of others or have been raised to perpetually exploit the conditions of others. It's just like the prison system. Forced cohabitation. The child's presence in certain buildings and their engagement in state-regulated behavior is under penalty of imprisonment. An entire army of truancy officers have been hired to make sure that no child is on the other side of the bars. At the end of 18 years of coercive state authority, the child is released into the world. It's like the end of an 18-year prison sentence. Now that you're trained to do as you're told, now you can be free. And the produce of these schools, or this state-controlled manufacturing operation, is a society willing to submit, to obey, and to listen. Forced behavior, which technically amounts to a type of slavery, will only inculcate a mindset of fear and terror. You need to be somewhere at a set time, either at the orders of an authority or a bell. Everyone in one mass shifts to another position or another place to engage in a new activity. They're trained to not only follow instruction, but they're also trained to follow a certain behavior. Rules, regulations, and laws are set for the children. They say you cannot do this to others. You can do this to others. This is acceptable. This is not acceptable. Standards of culture, morality, and behavior are imprinted into these new young minds that are in the blossoming stages of development. Their minds are being intercepted by the state and molded to conform to state standards. The first lesson they teach you is the orders of authority. The second lesson is to work with each other to achieve the desired ends of those in control. If a group of children are taught to engage in the same behavior regardless of what they want to do, then they will never fight back as adults. And this is your group of tenants who will live in roaches and never call the health inspector. This is your group of citizens who is easily terrified by police officers into voluntarily giving up their rights. This is your group of workers who surrender their lives to the corporation who tells them how to dress, how to speak, what time to wake up, which means they essentially tell you what time to go to sleep or they tell you what time to wake up. This is nothing new. These are the fruits of mandatory schooling. If we look into the roots of 19th century industrialism, the Civil War demonstrated to industrialists and financiers how a standardized population trained to follow orders without significant thought could be made to function as a money tree. It's no surprise that global power and corporate wealth is based on a third-rate educational system that works against developing individuals of true character and true intellect. Because the mindless bureaucrat or the thoughtless worker who will follow a system without question is the pattern that our system depends on. And this is what school produces. The system is not designed to educate the public, which is why federal and state bureaucracies call the shots, not the parents, not the local school boards. Every law is harshly enforced with maximum punishments. The tone of a principal is much like the tone of a warden, with no check on his authority. They will always have a way of using coercive ability to enforce a standard on the population. Strict punishment awaits any kid who disobeys this ruling force, and there is no doubt that an active student body reflects positively on school administrators. It's like factory floor men. They're fulfilling their quotas to the inspecting superintendent of the local school district. This is the reality of government training. The state doesn't care if children are homeless or on the streets or suffering from malnutrition and hunger, but the second the child fails to appear in school at the scheduled time, like a court date, the police are alerted. Until we abolish mandatory schooling, your child will be brought up as a slave so that he can accept becoming a slave later in life in adulthood.
Okay, Moores, if there's anybody out there that disagrees with what you just heard, raise your hand and you can explain to us your side of the story. Okay? Just go ahead and raise your hand. We're waiting on you right now. If you disagree with what you just heard, then raise your hand. Because we had this gentleman come on, give us a complete breakdown, and then turn around and tell you that you need to abolish the entire system. Now, this is how I see it. Okay, we're created by the Creator as free moral agents. Okay? In other words, to do as we please. And we have 10 laws that we are bound by, just 10. Now, we have this country, it was no longer a country, it's a corporation. We have a corporation now that says that we don't need this book that contained the 10 laws in the school, that we got to get that out of the school system. You can't, we got to eliminate prayer. You can't do none of that. We got to get rid of all this free moral agency. We got to remove this, because what we want you to do is do what we tell you to do. If you go to the school and say, look, I have a brand new program that I would like to implement in the school system, and it involves empowering the people so that they can be self-sustaining and not following anyone, but being leaders of their own selves, their own communities, and their own lives. You will receive opposition. They will call the cops on you, put you out of the building, because that's not allowed, because we want slaves. So what we have done is design a library for you so that you, the parent, can educate yourself and educate your children right there in the privacy of your own home. You don't have to continue to send your child to school in a school system that's not designed to educate them. That's right. I'm telling you, if you love your child, you say you love your child, and you're going to invest all your time sending that child into a system that you know doggone well is not designed to empower your child or give them any type of power or freedom, and they are to go to school for 12 years, and then once they get out of there, they'll graduate from there. And if you got enough money, then you can send them to a college for more brain conditioning. And then when they get out of there, then they hope that they can find employment somewhere working for somebody else. An amazing system. Now you have an alternative. Because now you can take control of your brains of your own children, and there are devices and tools that are available to you, and you can put correct information in your child's head. If we had three children, if we had what we would call a black child, then we have a Caucasian child, and then we have a Chinese child. In elementary school, in the classroom, each one of these children has to be empowered from the start. The so-called black child needs to learn everything or be taught everything about his own culture, his own story, the greatness and magnificence of the empires that were built by his ancestors. And by giving the child that and making sure that that child have that, the child has what's called pride. No further lies about his culture can be told to him, because the child have the truth. It's been instilled in him before he left the house. It's instilled in him in the school, in the elementary school. By the time he gets to third grade, it's reiterated. When he gets to fifth grade, it's reiterated. When he gets to sixth grade, he's even told more about the magnificence and greatness of his people, and along with reading, writing, and arithmetic. But you see, this society is not designed for that, because that kind of child, you cannot blow smoke up that child's behind, because it don't fit. You can't tell them nothing about Christopher Columbus discovering nothing, because it don't fit, you see. And so now we have a child with pride in himself, knowledge of self, and the horse is in front of the cart. Same thing with the other two children. When we get to the Chinese child, he's supposed to learn everything about that particular culture and the greatness and magnificence of that culture, because that's the culture that he belongs to. But you see, inside the system, inside the United States, the entire system and everybody in it is taught nothing but what they want you to know about their culture, you see. And we're going to sort through and pick out and hand-pick information about your culture and make sure we sprinkle it along a little bit. It's okay for you to learn about Martin Luther King in February. It's okay for you to learn about President Kennedy and Abraham Lincoln and George Washington and all of these things and Christopher Columbus. That's standard procedure, okay, in there. But when you go to talking about the great ancient Kemetans, and the great pharaohs and all of that. Well, we got a problem. You see, you're not supposed to know that because you're trying to put the horse in front of the cart. We got it hitched at the back of the wagon, and we want you to try to move forward, and you can't because it's not designed for that. So if anybody disagrees with what I'm telling you, go ahead and raise your hand, and I'll open up the lines. Okay.
Rock me a little while.
All right, Moses, we back. I had to bring this information out about the school system because I got a call from a brother up in Chicago, and he told me that his child, he have access to my archives, and he said that his child loves to be in that library, and the little girl, she print off different materials that she had been reading and studying and stuff, and he's been working with her, getting her to understand the greatness and magnificence of her culture. And when she went back to school, the teacher, they was on the subject about Christopher Columbus discovering America. And, of course, that didn't fit. So the young lady told the teacher, say, well, I can't believe that because I know better than that, that Christopher Columbus, he was a thief, and he was sent back to Spain in chains. He, all this about him discovering something, he never did it. He never set foot in America. And so the teacher said, well, where are you getting this information from? She said, I have it right here in my book bag. And she reached in a book and pulled out the documents for the teacher to read it. And the little girl said, you're supposed to check out the author and the credibility of the author that wrote it. And, of course, the teacher, Caucasian gentleman, he got upset. And he said, look, I'm sending you outside to go to the principal's office and tell him what you just did because you're disturbing my class. And so the young lady goes to the principal's office, and the principal wants to know, why are you here in my office? And she explained it to him, and he wanted to see the papers for himself, so she gave him the papers. He got mad, too. So he told the little girl to go outside and pick up paper. Okay. The father called me and told me about it. And he wanted to go down there and raise sand. I said, well, no, don't do that. I said, go to the spot shop, get you some little audio video devices, put them on a little keychain, or make a little necklace, and put around a neck and send them back in there. And record it all, get the audio and video, and show what they're doing. And they did that. They captured the information, got it down on, uploaded on the computer, downloaded it on a DVD disc. I said, now send it to the school board, send it to the mayor, and send it to the governor and make a copy for the sheriff's department. Needless to say, the phone went ringing off the hook. People on the other end crying and begging and pleading not to sue. They sued them, walked away with $200,000. Now, reason I'm telling you this right here is because the first thing that you are supposed to be taught when you go to school is who you are. Before you start putting anything in the container, let's find out what kind of container we're going to put it in. Let's find out who you are, everything about you, your culture, your story. That's the first thing you're supposed to be taught. You're supposed to be taught that in your house. And when you leave school, you go to kindergarten. You're supposed to be taught there. You're supposed to be taught on up all the way until you get out of school. By the time you get out of school, you're supposed to be a master when it comes to your culture and your story. Everything else comes second. You see, the reading, writing, arithmetic, all that goes along with it. But what we have here inside the United States is we have a system that is not designed to empower you with the truth and the power and the magnificence of what you need to know, so that you will be able to short-circuit any liar that comes to you about a story about something else, because it don't match, it don't belong. Anyway, I just want to put that information out. For those of you who want to register with your government, go to www.moorishamericangov.org. So you will be a citizen for the first time inside the United States with your own government, because the United States is a corporation, and the United States or Walmart, neither one can make you a citizen, okay? So we still have people of African descent walking around inside the United States still actually believing that this is a country. They won't do an investigation. They've been programmed not to do any investigation, just accept things. And we want to get rid of that kind of can on and show you how to use your brain. I mean, if your creator made you a free moral agent, then act like it. Do your own research. Do your own study so that you can provide the facts. Okay, now we're going to deal with some things this evening And but if you got any questions or comments based on anything that you've heard me say or anything that's been on any of these plugs that I put up, go ahead and raise your hand, and I will open up the line so that you can state what you want to say. Okay? So don't hesitate. I mean, if you think I'm lying to you, misleading you, go ahead and raise your hand. Okay?
Split show for you tonight. Next hour, we'll talk about some doomsday preppers. When we come back in a moment with Lindsay Williams, we flip the switch and we'll take your calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Lindsay Williams with us, your phone call. So, Lindsay, the plan is this one world government to bring us down to our knees. Do they really think they're going to pull it off?
Yes, they definitely do think they're going to pull it off, and barring something unforeseen, they will. Keep in mind that during the time of the Great Depression in 1929 through 1933, not everyone stood in a soup line. There were many people who made great fortunes. And if you know what the elite are going to do over the next 4 years' time, you can so structure your financial affairs and in such a manner that you do not have to stand in a soup line when all this happens. I think what the elite have just told me in that they have no intentions in allowing a collapse of the American dollar or a financial major problem in the next 2 years' time or more like three or four. This is a golden opportunity. Right now, the dollar is still strong. It still has fairly good purchasing power. It's not going to stay that way. But if you will take the advice of those who are doing it, literally listen to what they have to say, you positively can spare your dinner table and save yourself a lot of heartache.
Well, that's smart. Just don't put your money in Cyprus banks.
Definitely don't put it in Cyprus banks, and don't put it into paper. If it's written on a piece of paper, it's worth the paper it's written on. The elite are into tangibles, and you definitely do need to make some preparations. I had said back on, up until 2 or 3 years ago, I said every person should have at home between the mattress at least enough in the way of cash to take care of them in case there is a bank closure or
All
a bank
right.
problem.
How long do you think they should have money put aside for to last?
This is what I was about to say. I have changed a little bit, and I'm advising people now that I used to say, if you can afford it, keep 6 months' worth. If you can afford it, keep 9 months' worth. I don't say that anymore. Right now, cash can't be used. I tried to use some cash the other day, and the store almost went into hysteria. They said, no, we can't do that. Now you need to realize what cash really is and how close to the end it is, how the dollar is devaluating. And I recommend to people now that they have maybe 2 or 3 months of cash at home that you can afford to lose if you have to because it's paper. But everything else should be where the elites is.
Well, you know, Lindsay, most people have a very difficult time even having enough cash set aside to last a week. You know what I mean? I mean, they're so backed up paycheck to paycheck.
That's the way most Americans are living, and that's the way they want it. You remember I said a moment ago that I was told that they want to, over the next 4 years, to create forced debt creation, and I emphasize that word as it was emphasized to me. They are forcing people to go into debt. I was given a devaluation formula. Let me give it to you right quickly.
All right.
I hope you have pencils and paper. Please write this down because it can spare you much heartache. The elite have a devaluation formula. I want you to figure it. You can do it right there on your calculator at home. You don't need me to help you do it. Now, let's look at this. What is the dollar that you're holding that may be in a savings account, maybe in a checking account, whatever it may be, but how much is it devaluing every month, and how long can you continue that devaluation until it gets to the place that you can't take care of your household, for instance? Let's put down, first of all, 3 to 4%. What the Federal Reserve did back in September of saying we are going to purchase $40 billion worth of mortgage-backed securities every month, your dollar is automatically devaluing between 3 and 4% because of what the Fed did. Now, add on the new taxes that you are faced with and add on at least a 2%. Then add on the health care tax. you're going to be faced with. Now, you go to the grocery store. You know approximately how much groceries are increasing percentage-wise. Then we know what inflation is. The government even admits to that. 7 to 9% per year, so add on approximately a half to three-quarters of a percent. Now, take all those percentages. That's how much your dollar is losing in purchasing power and is devaluing every month that goes by. How long? And the elite have already figured this. They know about what the average American is going to be able to do. How long will it be that you can continue to put clothes on the back of the children, food on the table, put gasoline in the gas tank, and still pay the house mortgage?
Aren't they concerned, Lindsay, about civil unrest?
Oh, they positively are. They are very concerned about civil unrest. They don't want it. They'll do anything in order to keep it down. Remember I said earlier in the program that when I lived with them, one of the things I learned is they are scared to death of the masses waking up. That's one thing they don't want.
And they are waking up.
They are waking up, and the elite are very concerned, and they've expressed it to me. You remember back when you had the Wall Street protesters?
Yes.
And nearly every talk show I'd go on back in those days, the talk show host disagreed with me. They said, it's going to grow, it's going to grow, it's going to get bigger and bigger. Well, I was talking to my elite friend, and he said, Chaplain, we aren't going to let it get bigger. I went back on some of these talk shows, and you mentioned one of the prominent talk show hosts a moment ago. He and I had quite a talk about that one day. And I said, it is going to stop. I said, mark my words, they're not going to let it go much further. Where's the Wall Street protesters today?
It's gone. There's
nothing about them anymore. They don't want revolution. The elite want to bring in the new world order according to their dictates. Keep in mind something. The elite are not, they're not communists.
Well, let me be the devil's advocate for a moment. Not a good thing to say to a chaplain, by the way.
No, please do. I don't mind. I find him every day, the devil, that is, not you.
But let me ask you this. On the face of it, you know, you look at the old movies, Star Trek, and they have this federation. All these planets came together for the common good. So on the face of it, what's wrong with one world government where they take care of everybody at the same way? Does that sound like a panacea, like something fantastic for all of us?
Oh, they are going to persuade the people of the world that this is the only answer, that it is the way to go, that they definitely should do it, and they will come in with an answer to your financial problem, which will be a new currency backed by gold, by the way. Please, they must take gold to $3,000 an ounce in order to back the new world currency with it. You're going to see silver go to $75 an ounce in order to back the new world currency. And they'll say, oh, we have the answer here. Your children won't be hungry any longer. You don't need that constitution of yours. We have something much better. This is what they want to convince people of. And they have a very fascinating way of doing it, and they have full intentions in doing that.
Well, you may be right. Let's take some calls here, Lindsay. They're lining up for you. We'll start with going to Jan in Brooklyn, New York. I'm bringing her up first because I met her at my conference in Edison, New York, and you were as a delight then, Jan, as you probably will be on the phone now. How are you?
Oh, it was great seeing you, and you were a lot of fun, and people loved you. And the Skydia said we're going to start a coast-to-coast meetup group in New York City.
That's great. And that, by the way, I was in New Jersey. You're in New York. So go ahead. You got a question?
Yeah, two questions. Do you think that they want to put chips into people? That's one question. And the second question is the GMO food. Are they trying to destroy people by having us eat GMO foods?
Yes, GMO foods are definitely detrimental to the person's health. And we don't know how it's altering the gene structure of the human being, but we believe that it is. They are using many, many different methods in order to limit population, and it is definitely a part of the total program.
There you go, Jan. Thanks for being on the program. She was a delight when I met her. Spry little person. Let's go to Steve in Statesville, North Carolina, east of the Rockies. Hello, Stephen.
Hi, good evening, gentlemen.
Hi.
I'd like to ask your guest, he already answered the question, I believe, about gold and silver. Where is it going to, and perhaps how soon, maybe? And also, is there any plans in the future for confiscation of such items? I'll take my answer off there, and thank you very much.
Well, I don't know if they're, are they going to confiscate that?
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked about gold and silver because it is so vitally important. First of all, don't be concerned about what's happening to gold and silver prices right now. It means nothing. China, India, other countries are buying it by the tons because they know where it's going. As far as confiscation is concerned, I'll tell you what one of my elite friends said to me back a number of years ago. He said, Chaplain, we aren't going to allow our currency to be touched. Do you notice that you still can go in and buy it and sell it and you still don't pay taxes on it? I mean, that's state taxes whenever you buy it, like you would pay a sales tax. They are keeping their currency free from being bothered. And I do not sell gold. I don't sell silver. You couldn't buy an ounce from it if you tried. If I had any, I'd keep it, that's for sure. But the elite have let me know they aren't going to allow it to be touched. I don't think you have anything to worry about with confiscation.
Nope, not at all. Let's go to Paul in Cleveland, Ohio, first-time caller. Paul, welcome to the program.
George, how you doing?
Good, Paul. Thank you.
It's a pleasure to be on your show.
Great.
I have a question for your guest, and the question is, can you explain all of these bunkers that they're building?
Well, as you know, Lindsay, they've been building all these strange little facilities for some time. Is that the work of the elitist?
I have never had one of them mention that to me. It very well could be. Yet on the other hand, I'm going to say that it has never come into our conversation. I do realize that all of your powerful government officials are well protected. I'll put it this way. I made a survey a while back of my elite friends where they live, the ones that I knew 37 years ago. And some of them I have the phone number off, some of them I didn't. So I asked a particular one. I said, where does this person or this person live? I named them because I remembered some of their names. And I could not find a single elitist that is living in a metropolitan area. Every one of them have their private residence in the middle of nowhere, and I was amazed how many of them have a residence in Alaska. They have gotten out of the cities because they anticipate the possibility that there may be a problem.
You have talked about how you think 70% of the Americans will be receiving some sort of check or aid from the government soon.
One of the agendas of the elite over the next 4 years. Now, mark this, and you'll come back 4 years from now.
Is this a Lindsay Williams prediction?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
No, this is not my prediction. This is their prediction, but you'll blame it on Lindsay Williams. 4 years from now, you'll come back and say, George and Nora, you had a prophet on your program that night. And I'm going to tell you, I am not a prophet. I don't get any of this from tea leaves or fortune tellers. I don't get it from divine revelations. The elite tell me, and I try to tell you so I can help you. Right now, 38% of all the people in the United States of America are receiving some sort of a payment every month from either the federal or state government.
Yeah.
4 years from now, the elite already have it planned that 70% of the people in America will either receive food stamps, Medicare, Medicaid, retirement, Social Security. Nothing wrong with many of those things. You paid into the Social Security. You deserve to have it back. But I'm saying 70% will be receiving some sort, whether it be food stamps or whatever it may be, from the federal government within the next 4 years. There will never be another honest election in the United States of America because the person who writes that paycheck will get the votes.
Oh, there's no doubt. There is no doubt. I mean, it's like buying the vote.
They want their man in. They have everything planned to get it so that they can set up the new world order exactly as they want it. And barring some – there's one thing I love about the Americans, though, George, and that is they have a tenacity that I don't think any other nation's people on the face of this earth have. So see how they wiped out the gun stores on immediately after Mr. Obama said that he was going to try to – anything within his power – to get gun rules through, and I went to a local gun store in my area the following week. I couldn't believe
it. They sell more guns. Of course, there's an ammo shortage now, as you know.
Yeah, he was the greatest promoter of gun sales of any president for years. And I walked into the store. These Chevs were literally wiped out. I couldn't believe it. They wiped them out again just recently when this thing took place, and he used it as an excuse to promote all of this. Wiped out the gun stores again. Now ammunition. A man said to me the other day, he said, this is not the elite now. But a friend of mine said, you know what the new gold is? I said, what's that? He said ammunition.
Oh, that's right, which has doubled in price now.
Oh, yes, at least.
It's going crazy. But you know what? The control of guns has been a quest of governments, I don't know for how long, but they have. And we both know that an armed society is a free society and a more well-protected society. I mean, studies show that concealed weapons in specific cities that have passed it, crime goes down.
Guns, our founding fathers knew that guns were necessary in order to protect the people from government. I hope you caught that.
Yeah.
The elite aren't concerned so much about guns. In fact, some of them are very much against some of these new gun laws that are being put through because they are going to be able to so persuade people that the new world order has a peaceful manner about it. I go back again and make a few statements.
Well,
here.
See, but I think the New World Order people, Lindsay, the elitists, want our guns confiscated before they try to implement any kind of control.
You have two factions. We really have three factions out there right now that one of my elite friends explained to me recently. You have the older elite who have a certain idea. You have the younger elite who are much more liberal. And then you have what they are calling I'm trying to think of the word they gave me the other day. It is a renegade elite, such as...
A rogue group.
Yeah, they call it, well, for instance, take the BRICS group. That is the group that formed their own bank just recently here, Brazil and some of the rest of them. And then you've got this group that met in Phnom Penh back in December the 1st of 2012, which was 15 Asian nations comprising half of the world's population. And the elite realized that they have a renegade elite is the way they're describing it out there, that they have to bring under control because in some ways they're getting a little out of control now. The elite have some problems on their hands also. Everything isn't rosy with them right now.
Well, there's factions within and they're all fighting.
There are some factions within the older elite and the younger elite that are in opposition to each other as to some of their basic policies right now. They all agree on one thing. We must bring in the new world order within a matter of 4 to 6 years.
Well, there does seem to be an obsession with it. Even Zbigniew Brzezinski, the former Carter aide, had said at a CFR meeting, Council of World Affairs, that people are becoming more aware of them and what the plan was.
And it bothers them. It very much is concerning to them. I've been saying I began doing radio talk shows back in 1980 after my book Energy and Non-Crisis came out, and I've been saying ever since then, the one thing that the elite fear more than anything else is the masses waking up. They are beginning to see that they're waking up now, and as a result, they are having to escalate their plans because they don't want too much wake up. They don't want too many George Norris out there. They don't want too many Lindsey Williams out here. They don't want too many people giving this to a certain point. Yet, on the other hand, they are seeing a waking up of Americans much more than they're seeing it in other countries of the world.
We're going to come back in just a moment with Lindsey Williams. We'll take some final phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. Lindsey's website linked up for you. Do make a point to go up there and take a look at it. We will be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And our special guest, Lindsey Williams, this hour, next hour, Doomsday Preppers. We'll talk about that and some other special things associated with that as well. Beyond Belief, that's our television program. You can watch it. It's 10 days free. Take advantage of it. Look at all their videos as well, as much as you can in those 10 days. Simply go to our website, coasttocoastam.com. At the top, click hosts, and then our TV icon. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Lindsay, some of the other things that are part of the agenda, of course, they want to phase the dollar out. What do they want to replace it with?
The dollar will be phased out, and the entire world is going to go into a world currency. This will be inevitable. There will be a cashless society. A good idea as to how they're phasing the dollar out. This happened back in December the 1st of 2012, not too many months ago. There was a meeting in Phnom Penh. There were 15 Asian nations. Our president went. Before he left to go over there, you heard it all over the news that he was going over there to do wonders for America, get American jobs, on and on you go. When he came back, you heard not one single word. Why? The group was called the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership. And when the president got there, he said, we don't want you. Go back home. America's not going to be a part of this. This was an association of Asian nations, including China, Japan, South Korea, Australia, and New Zealand. 3 billion Asians comprising one half of the world's population. And at the meeting, they said, we are not going to use the American dollar any longer. One half of the world's population. We are not going to use the American dollar anymore in trade amongst ourselves, and we are going to convert to the Chinese currency.
Isn't that what got Saddam Hussein in trouble?
He was doing it with the petrodollar or with oil.
Right.
These nations are doing it with every product that they sell and trade amongst each other. China is definitely a problem right now.
If you were running the Chinese government, Lindsay, you'd do the same thing.
Oh, I do exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
They're winning over the United States of America. They're going to have a new petrodollar.
And they're doing it with our dollars, basically. it's our money they've made profits with. Right?
Yes, they definitely have bought our T-bills. They have us over a barrel. We are in real big trouble. We've been sold out by some of our politicians. But, you know, the same thing is happening with the BRICS group, which was Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. It met last year 18% of the world's population. 18% of the world's GDP and 53% of the global financial capital. And they said, we are not going to use the American dollar any longer in the sale and trade of products amongst ourselves. Now, this is the way, George, that they are phasing out the dollar. The dollar, the only people in the world that don't know that the dollar's gone is the Americans. And Americans are continually saying to me, oh, I can still go to the grocery store and buy groceries, the hardware store, and the drugstore. I say, yes, but do you have the slightest idea that because of what BRICS did and because of what they did at Phnom Penh, that there are trillions and trillions of American dollars out there floating around right now that are going to come home 9 to 12 months from now, and when the chickens come home to roost, the American dollar is in big trouble, and all of that coincides with what the elitist gave me when he said, Chaplain, we do not want a catastrophic event for the dollar in at least 2 years, maybe three, and then whenever they allow the derivative market to collapse.
Again.
Then you're going to have a big problem. Every currency in the world will be involved when the derivative market collapses, and they created derivatives about 40 years ago for the purpose of bringing about currency wars, trade wars, and an ultimate interest rate hike, which whenever you see that happen, you know that anything you have in paper, you've lost it.
If you could afford it, would you buy a new house now if you could get a great deal on it?
If I could pay cash for it, if it was mortgaged, I would not want it under any circumstances, and I advise people above everything to get a paid-for roof over your head if you possibly can.
How many people can do that, Lindsay?
Very, very few, practically none, and the elite have already – I gave you a moment ago a devaluation formula. Do you realize that they have already calculated how long it will be before the average person cannot afford to put clothes on the back, food on the table, gas in the gas tank, and pay the house mortgage? And they know that the one thing they're going to leave off when the children are crying and wanting food, they're going to leave off that house mortgage payment. And then the Federal Reserve, who has bought up these mortgage-backed securities, steps in. They are the elite. They're the new world
order. Well, I believe that.
They step in and they say, oh, we'll be more than happy to repossess it. We just don't give you anything back. And we'll turn around and rent it back to you for the rest of your life. This is what they want. The name of the game is control.
We're going to phones again. West of the Rockies, John is in Sumas, California. Hey, John, you're on with Lindsey Williams.
Hey, Lindsey, how you doing?
Hi, John. Thanks for calling.
I got a question for you. Actually, I've got a little challenge for you here. Your presentation on your story, I'm questioning. In the warningsecondcoming.com, Jesus on Saturday gave a message regarding the false prophet who's in the seat of Peter right now, and that the progress for the Third World War will start and usher in the Antichrist, which will create the One World Order, which is what you're talking about. You haven't brought Jesus or any of your references as a chaplain into those languages at all in this conversation so far tonight. So I have a hard time grabbing a hold of the guts of you being a chaplain. I am myself a chaplain, and you haven't brought any of the references of Christ or the Book of Truth, which would be the Bible, or any of those things involved with the loyalty of your relationship with being a chaplain. Can you explain that?
May I invite you to please go to lindseywilliams.net, not .com, but .net, and you'll notice that the first item on the website is a full gospel message, an invitation. We're having the first 45 minutes of that being put up on my website. We had approximately 5,000 people that went and viewed it. There are many, many people coming to know Christ as their Savior as a result of what we're doing on our new lindseywilliams.net, and I invite everyone to go there and see many things that you won't get any other place.
What do you think of the new Pope, Lindsey? He seems a little pretty gutsy.
Yeah, he sure seems to be a feisty little guy. And, of course, there were some prophecies made about him. And supposedly, I don't know whether they be true or not, but supposedly this is the last pope and will usher in the Antichrist. So I've read some articles about it.
Well, if had his name been Peter or he picked Peter, that definitely could have kicked in. There's some debate over whether he's got Peter in his name. Apparently, Pedro was in Francis of Assisi's name, and people are thinking, well, since he took that name, maybe he's got Peter in his name, too. But, yeah, this is the prophecy of St. Malachi back in the 15th century, that this could be the last pope.
It very well could be. I personally feel that it is. I believe we're living in the last days just before the coming again of Jesus Christ. And as I mentioned, I'm 77 years of age, and I have full intentions in being here to hear the trumpet sound. So, yes, I don't avoid the presentation of the gospel. I know that this is a secular program. I had a program the other day that at the end of the show, the talk show host said, "Now, Chaplain, would you have prayer?" And I did. So every now and then we have the opportunity to do that.
There are some shows out there that do that.
Yeah, and that's fine. But if you want it all, go to lindseywilliams.net, and we have many sections there that I think will be of great help to you. Folks, everybody out there in the listening audience, coast to coast tonight, I'm here for the purpose of trying to help you save your dinner table. The reason I do what I do is to try to tell you the truth. You have watched it over the past 37 years. Not one single thing that the elite have ever told me over 37 years have failed to happen exactly as they've said it. I brought these 10 agendas to the public because I want to help you know how to overcome the New World Order. And George, let me say emphatically, I believe you and I are going to win. Now, I haven't said this so far in the program. I do believe we're going to win over the New World Order. There is a handful of them, and I know many of them. There's millions of us, and those millions are waking up very, very rapidly. And I want to give you hope tonight in the fact that we are going to overcome this, and we will stay a free people. We will keep our Constitution. I am not leaving America, as many of my friends are, because I believe that it's my job to stay here and help turn this country around. And This is the reason that I put out what we've just done in the next 4 years. After I heard the 10 agendas of the elite, I went in studio, and it took me 3 hours and 29 minutes to explain what I had heard. You'll be amazed how much it can help you. But when I got through doing it, I could not get it to the public. I could not put it out. Remember, I was a pastor for 12 years. I could not put out the next 4 years. I contacted a Wall Street insider of years ago who now has left because he couldn't stand the corruption any longer. I found two of the financial brains of America, and I said, would you go in studio with me and help me tell the people how to survive the next 4 years? And in 2 hours and 40 minutes, we produced a solution to every problem that the elite are going to present over the next 4 years. You can spare your dinner table. You can save your house heartache. You can help turn America around the next 4 years, how to survive the next 4 years. And I really believe, George, that the American people are waking up fast enough to do something about it.
Well, you know, I agree, Lindsay, but, you know, you keep saying the next 4 years. I think we need to be concerned about the next whenever years. They're not going to stop.
They're not going to stop, that's true, but neither are you and I.
Nope.
I have no intentions in quitting. I don't think you have any intentions in ceasing to give out the truth on coast to coast. So we have two factions here working in opposition to each other. You and I, George, are going to win. The American people are waking up so rapidly. And if the elite begin to accelerate their program, they're going to hurt themselves because they get riots started. And that's the last thing they want. They want to bring in the New World Order their way. So, George, we're going to win.
I believe that, too. Lori in Asheville, North Carolina. Hello, Lori. Go ahead.
Hi.
Howdy.
Do you recommend us getting out of debt, completely, totally out of debt? And are you aware of the debtors' prisons that apparently they have already built throughout the country?
We're going back to that era, huh? We're going to go back to that era. They used to do that a long time ago.
What?
You didn't, a debtor's prison.
Well, for the average person, to get out of debt completely is unthinkable. They are creating such massive debt. They're devaluating the dollar so much that you can't afford to pay this and pay that. They're creating this massive debt. They don't want you out of debt. It would be wonderful if every person could, and I highly recommend that if you can, you do it. But if you can't, then don't make any more debt. It is a trap, and this is one of their agendas. So don't fall into that trap of more debt.
Let's go to Norm in St. Louis. Welcome to the show. Hi, Norm.
How are you doing tonight?
Good. Thank you.
Hey, I was just calling in regards to your comment about what would be so wrong about the New World Order kind of running the show and dishing out things the way they see
right.
fit.
That was a devil's advocate question.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And a couple things on the Obama health care, that act that he passed the law about, you know, putting in your Verri chip in everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of scary to me. First off, I think the government knows enough about everyone as it is.
Apparently that was kicked out. Catherine Albrecht said that was taken out.
I was in the first.
So
okay,
gone.
I didn't know. I thought it was supposed to start coming out on the 23rd of March or something. But anyway, basically what my opinion is that, yeah, they have an agenda to run everything and kind of control everything and everybody. But ultimately, you got a pastor on your show. So ultimately, God decides what happens in this world and how it all ends and the prophecy and everything and really what. How can you can't stop the inevitable. What's going to happen is going to happen. The third temple is going to get built, and the two witnesses of Revelation are going to show up, and basically you might as well just kind of enjoy the ride until all that happens, right?
It's going to be one heck of a ride. Lindsay, there's no doubt that these things could unfold, but do we have free will? Can we change these things?
Oh, positively. In fact, you find many instances in the Bible where things were changed. You remember God was just about to wipe Israel away. They were all dancing around, having a gay time below the mount, and Moses came down, and he stood between he and Israel, and God said, okay, I won't destroy them. And You see, there are many times that the inevitable has changed. And, George, we are going to see this change this time in America, and we will win. If a person is willing to be a total slave, then the New World Order will be a glorious haven for you. But the average American doesn't want to be that way, and I don't think you or I do either. We will win.
Let's take one or two more quick calls if we can. Pat is in Baltimore, Maryland. Hey, Pat, go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hi, Patty.
Hi, Pastor Williams. First of all, I'd like to say I was laid off, and ever since I was, George, you're responsible for my not being able to sleep night. Since I found your program, I'm up till 5 every
well,
night.
Well, I hope
now.
That's a good thing then, Pat.
Oh, absolutely. I am so glad to have found your program because I'm into so many different things that are on your program. Pastor Williams, I was going to ask you about the Pope, too, and I don't hear you talk about God as most people do in the religious capacity, you know, being a clergyman when you come on. I know you're trying to give us worldly advice, but I think the gentleman before wanted to know why it is that you're not also bringing God into this, okay, number one. And number two is my question, back in 2008, World News Daily had Henry Kissinger on there, and he said that Obama's been primed to bring in the New World Order. Now, I don't know if this is correct or not, but this is my understanding that Obama's trying to get the remove the term limits on the presidency. Now, is he supposed to be in there, even though he's rubbing the elite the wrong way? Is he going to be in there, like, forever?
I don't think so. I don't think they'll do away with term limits, at least for the future. What do you think, Lindsay?
No, the American people won't stand for it. We still have a tenacity about the American people of freedom that other nations don't have. I don't think the American people would ever allow this. This would bring on revolution, and there again, whenever that happens, they back down, just like they've backed down on the gun issue.
I think so, too. Lindsay, almost out of time. Give us your websites again, and you have a toll-free number?
Please go, if you will. 24 hours a day, you will get an American operator, by the way. Our toll-free number is 1-888-799-6111, or you can go on the web if you'd like to, www.prophecyclub.com, PROPHECYCLUB.com, or toll-free 24 hours a day, 888-799-6111. The next 4 years and how to survive the next 4 years, two different DVD series, 6.5 hours, you view on your television, professionally made, and I hope it will spare your dinner table and be a great blessing to you.
Great. Lindsay, thank you so much. Scary times ahead, but you know what? Hold on so you don't fall out. Up next, we talk doomsday preppers, food production systems for a backyard. How about that? And much more.
Okay, Morris, we back. That was some very, very interesting information. I've been studying this stuff for quite some time, and I thought I'd share it with you. If you have any questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand. I recognize them, and you can let us know what you think about this stuff. Now, what we've added inside to Hawker's Archives is we've added many books over in the Survival 2 section in PDF format so that you can learn how to make your own soaps, make your own foods, make your own clothing, everything that it will take for you to be self-sustaining as an individual is there. And some stuff that you may not have even considered doing is there. We're placing a ton of information. And before this week out, we're going to add about 20 or 30 more books in that one section alone on survival. It's a very, very important area. We got survival link, and we got survival link 2. And in survival link 1 is all videos. We put in about 94 videos for you. That way you can watch them, you can pause, you can back up, you can go forward until you get it down, you can write it down, learn it, and so that you'll be able to survive. Very, very valuable information. And then we got the books and Survival Link 2, and all your articles and everything is PDF. Whole books are there, and we'll be adding a new ton of information in there. Everything that you need to do canning your foods, producing your foods, growing them, homemade items, all of the stuff that you can use to survive with in the event that something goes wrong. If nothing goes wrong, well, you ain't lost nothing because you can you might decide to, well, I'm going to go ahead and start doing this anyway, and I'm not going to, I'll just disconnect from the grid and be self-sustaining. And it's interesting because my great-great-grandparents and them, they were not connected to a grid. Everything they had, right there on the land, they had their own water, had their own chickens, their own cows, their own horses, every kind of fruit you can name, every kind of plant for food. They made their own clothes, they made their own quilts, made their own gunpowder, made their own guns, everything they did right there on their own land, disconnected from the grid. So this is not foreign, and I just want to, because see, today we have a whole lot of people, especially inside your inner cities, and they don't entertain this kind of thinking. And they think that by some hook or crook, something's going to happen, and everything will be all right. And that's just the bottom line. But the reality is the greatest focal point in your life is when preparedness and opportunity meet. It's better to be prepared in the event something goes wrong. You're able to survive, and your children are able to survive because of the knowledge and stuff that you take advantage of today. So we have made this available to you so that you'll never be able to say, well, I didn't have a chance to do nothing. I don't know nothing. They didn't teach me in school. This information is not being taught in any school or college or university inside the country. And if you ever try to put it in there, you'll see such opposition because they don't want nobody to be enlightened. They don't want you to be have this kind of power. So what we're going to do is we're going to empower you, and we'll make it available to you. You just simply go to TahakaArchives.org, get that as soon as you do, call me, and we go to work. And it can't be no more simpler than that. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we dealt with some things about derivatives and stuff, and I hope that a lot of you was paying attention to what was being said, because this thing is real. I had a friend of mine who travels all over the United States as a merchant marine on the big ships with the missiles and guns and stuff. And guy's got a top secret clearance and all of that stuff. But he comes here, and we sit down and we talk. And he tell me about the different places that he go in other countries around the world and that refuse to accept the dollar. You know, they just, you know, oh, no, we can't accept that. You know, you have to go trade that in for something else. We, you know, the American dollar, no, we don't want that here. You can't do anything with that here. And so there are countries today that does not accept the American dollar. So we have to be aware of what's going on and start putting things in motion and start preparing ourselves. If you on food stamps, you're getting some government subsidy on food stamps, don't go out in the streets to sell your stamps. Go ahead and make sure you start stacking up on your water, stack up on your dry goods. You know, put food in the house. You know, do something with it. Invest it into your future for survival. Go and get you about 200 cases of water, and stack it up there in the house. While you have a chance now, because in any grocery store across the country, you only have approximately 72 hours worth of food in any grocery store. And the first people that will be considered is the owners of the grocery stores, their families. Their families and friends will have to be first, and whatever is left will be to the general public, to get to the point where you got guards and police and National Guard stand out in front of the store telling you to keep moving. You can't come in now. So here's an opportunity now, right now, while you got an opportunity, while you got a chance to start preparing for survival. Okay? All right. Now, once again, we're going to be coming to Baton Rouge, Louisiana on the 30th and 31st of this month. And for those of you who want to make reservations, be there. You contact Mr. Mike Robertson L. at 225-445-6018. That's 225-445-6018. We'll be right there in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. We'll be teaching on law right there, so don't miss this. Also, on the 16th through the 18th of August, we'll be hosting our Morris Summit, our second Morris Summit anniversary, right here in Jacksonville, Florida, in the Wyndham Hotel. That is the 16th through the 18th of the week. If you need any information about that, just go ahead and contact me at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we can give you all the information. And don't forget, for those of you who are just tuning in, I'm giving away some free articles this evening, the 14th Amendment Exposed, as well as the Commerce Game and How to Play, and Secrets of America. Just send me an email to tahaka53@hotmail.com. That's T-A-R-H-A-K-A 53@hotmail.com.
In the theme of the last couple hours, as we talk about what the elitists are trying to do, how do you survive through it? Up next, we'll be talking with Marjorie Wildcraft, back on Coast to Coast, talk a little bit about doomsday preppers and What's going on? We shall be right back. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Last year, you might have heard Marjorie Wildcraft on with me, creator of a video tutorial called Grow Your Own Groceries. Now, the series teaches people with no experience how to turn their backyards into an organic food-producing paradise. Universities and missionary groups use her videos as it quickly gets people to speed up and save precious years of time in getting ready to have that food and get it growing. Marjorie, how have you been?
Oh, George, I'm doing great, and I am so delighted. I just love Coast, and I just love all the topics you bring up, and such a great service.
We're going to have some fun. You were just on Doomsday Preppers, weren't you?
I was. It was just tonight. Oh, my God.
When did they tape it? Now, how soon was it? What was the time lapse between that and when you were on?
We taped it in October.
That's pretty fast. And they keyed on you on what, food?
On teaching, yes, I was featured as an expert teaching a family some basic survival skills. And, yes, food. I was showing them how to eat insects.
Oh!
I know. Well, you know, this is television, George. These guys, they don't have the same integrity.
Did you eat an insect?
I do, yes. And, I eat them, you know, occasionally.
What did you eat?
I had some mealyworms, and we had some crickets and some scorpions.
I bet you're an interesting date when people go out to dinner with you.
You can ask my husband about that, yeah.
I mean, did he ever go to dinner with you and say, you know, she's going to have some mealworms while I have the steak?
Yeah, we didn't go to those kind of restaurants. But, you know, you take a little $6 bowl of soup in France, and you put a scorpion on top of it. You've now got a $20 bowl of soup.
You've got to be kidding me.
No, I'm not. And in China, a scorpion on a stick, that's a delicacy.
Hey, what did they do, barbecue it or roast it or what?
You know, it doesn't take much to cook them. They're little bitty things.
What about the poison in it?
You know, surprisingly, it just seems to get nullified when you cook it. You know, some people cut the tips off, but you don't have to.
Yuck. Do people eat, like, bats and stuff like that?
Well, bats are a different thing.
I've never heard of someone eat a bat.
No, I haven't heard of people eating bats either.
So why not?
Isn't a bat a rodent, technically?
Yeah, it is a rodent.
Yeah, I mean, because people eat mice and rats and things
like that. They eat, in Asia, they eat rodents.
The Tarahumara Indians, right? The guys that are the fastest, most best long-distance runner in the world, they consider mouse a delicacy.
I had heard that I saw a picture once of some tribe eating rodents, and it was like piled up 5 feet high.
Oh, my God.
It was gross.
That would be bad, yeah.
That's not what you mean from Doomsday Preppers, but like you just said, you teach people how to survive.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know the four horsemen of the apocalypse?
Yep.
You've got famine, and you've got drought, and you've got disease, and one of them is the locust. And the way to get through the period with the locusts come and they eat everything. They eat all of your crops. They eat all your seed. They eat everything, right? Well, the way to get through that period is to dry the locust, to salt the locust, to preserve the locust, and to eat the locust until you can get everything established and going again.
Yuck.
I know.
But I guess if people are starving, they will just about eat anything. I mean, we've heard the horror stories of people who are, you know, involved in plane crashes. You know, remember the one up in the Andes Mountains?
Yeah.
And they ended up having to eat each other.
Eat each other. Oh, gosh, yeah. Oof.
So I guess when you're starving, you'll do just about anything.
Well, and, you know, the reason I got into it, and it was from a nutritional angle, in your backyard, if you want to be self-sufficient in your backyard, or, you know, really being self-sufficient is difficult, but if you want to get as much self-sufficiency as you can, there's certain minerals, and especially the omega-3 fatty acids, are pretty, they're more of a challenge to grow. And actually, fats in general are more difficult to grow. But insects are abundant in those. They have a lot of minerals, and they also are, you know, very fatty. They're high in fat and protein.
Well, how did you get started eating insects?
Well, as I said, I've been curious about it because it is, you know, it's kind of one of the survival foods. And, you know, I've lived in Asia for many years, and the rest of the world just doesn't have a thing about insects the way we do. They're like, you know, that's a food source. They don't really see it as an issue. And I had a friend of mine who had been dabbling in it for a couple of years, and I said, Alan, I said, I really want to learn, but I got to tell you, I'm just so grossed out by this, but I think I know a way that I can possibly get myself to do this. And he said, what's that? And I said, let's throw a huge party and invite everybody and have them bring their bugs, and we'll have a keg on tap. And then this is Austin, Texas. We might have some other substances. And, you know, I'm going to alter my consciousness, and with peer pressure and an altered consciousness, I bet I'll eat some bugs. And I did. It was a fabulous party. It's one of those things like, you know, riding a roller coaster. You're like, oh, no, I just can't. I just don't think I can. Oh, my God, that was so good.
I mean, you actually get hunger satisfied eating insects?
You know what the really interesting thing is, you know, once you can get past the yuck factor and your conditioning, there is something, I don't know if it's in the chitin or the proteins, but there is something, and your body recognizes it, and it's something that you're not getting in other sources, and it's not a huge thing, and it's kind of subtle, but there is, you know, I mean, that this, I guarantee you that somewhere in your ancestry they ate insects and they loved it, you know, and it probably wasn't that far back.
Not my ancestors.
Okay, Moles, we back. Now, I know the Moles ain't going out there for no insects. But I just thought I'd drop a little bit of that to see what you think. That's very, very interesting. But insects do have high certain nutritional factors and stuff. But as far as we're concerned, we stick to what we know. And I know my people. In the first place, you're going to have a very, very difficult time trying to get near a sister with any kind of bug, let alone eating one. So there's that. So if it really gets down to starvation, you have to consider that. But as for right now, I know me and I know my people. Bugs is that. We don't do bugs. So that's just the bottom line. Also, ladies and gentlemen, I want to add that we're going to be dealing with our drones. And for those of you who don't know what that is, let me explain it to you. Just imagine yourself, you see a kid with a remote control airplane, and it's a little small device, and he's able to fly it with the remote control. That's what a drone is. And these things are actually, that's exactly what hit the World Trade Center. Those were drones. And but these drones were equipped with a certain kind of substance to melt steel and turn rock to powder. And so that all evidence and stuff will be covered up. Nothing left from the drones. Another drone hit on the second area that the drone was supposed to hit in the inside the Pentagon. No evidence of that was ever found. No engines, no nothing. The one that crash landed out in the field, big hole in the ground, but you have nothing. So drones are a very, very interesting thing, and they do have these devices, and we want to find out what's going on with these particular devices, and I'm going to see if I can find that information. Now, if any of you have any questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand now, and we'll open up the lines, and you can tell us what's on your mind, okay? Go ahead and raise your hand, and we'll
don't understand, do you? Hey, man, don't you realize in order for us to make this thing work, man, we've got to get rid of the pimps and the pushers and the prostitutes and then start all over again clean.
Hey, look, nobody's pushing me anyway, okay? I mean, not you, not the cops, nobody, man. I mean, you want to get rid of the pushers, I'll help you. But don't send your people after me.
Oh, come on, John. Can't you see that we can't get rid of one without getting rid of the other? We got to come down on both of them at the same time in order for this whole thing to work for the people.
Hey, look, nobody's closing me out of my business.
up till you're giving him back. There'll be no peace. The brother's gonna work it out. Brother's gonna work it all. Brother's gonna work it out.
Brother's gonna work it out.
Brother's gonna work it all out.
Brother's gonna work it out.
Oh, brother, say, stop the pimps, the hustlers, the pusher, man, as fast as you can. Open your ears and eyes to the fact of what's truly holding you back.
This little incident that happened down here in Jacksonville, Florida. And I'm going to tell you a story, but I'm going to have to change the brother's name because the brother's still alive, and I didn't get permission to tell the story. However, I got to tell you this. We're going to call the brother the Hammer Doll. Now, Hammer Doll had a pool room. Hammer Doll was in the rackets. Hammer Doll had plenty of money. Everybody knew it. I'm a dog driving Rolls Royce all through town. Everybody knows you got to spend money. Now, you had two brothers that decide to rob the Hammer Dog. And so what they did was they came up on the brother and had 12-gauge shotgun during the winter time. And the brother come out of his place of business with a briefcase in his hand, about $200,000-$300,000 in it. And they have a briefcase. Brother said, I ain't even give him a briefcase. And brother pulled the trigger on a 12-gauge shotgun, hit him in the chest, knocked him over, slid down the sidewalk, dropped the briefcase. Brother grabbed a briefcase, jumped in a ride, and went on down the road, but somebody saw him, and they called the popo and told him that they had shot the Hammer Dog. And popo got him, cut him off, got him, put him in jail. But the same day, they thought that they had killed the Hammer Dog, but the brother was wearing a bulletproof vest. And the brother locked up. They're supposed to go to court in the morning, but the popo came down and said, hey, fellas, get your things together. Y'all going home. They said, we going home? Y'all just letting us go? I said, y'all got to go. Somebody paid your bail. Paid our bail? Who paid our bail? Said, I don't know. It was anonymous. They said, well, we ain't leaving. We ain't going to. Said, no, you got to leave out of here. And these brothers, they'll start fighting with the popo. They fighting inside the jail to stay in the jail to keep them going out. But the popo threw them outside the jailhouse, and Hammer Dog was waiting. And I just wanted to, every time I hear that song there, I think about them. Both of them dead. But anyway, we're going to go on down to the next next segment, and we're gonna deal with these drones. And so y'all hold your hat, and we'll be right back. Okay.
Listen up, Morph. This week we will be adding your survival link to Tahaka Archives. Just go to TahakaArchives.org and get yourself in there. Give me a call. We'll have all your articles there in PDF format. We may put some word there, but we'll definitely have tons of video for you, so you can actually see how to go about surviving and increasing and sharpening your survival skills. We're going to add that along with a ton of other information. The way you access it, simply go to TahakaArchives.org. After you do that, contact me, Tahaka Monel Bay, at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Be sure to subscribe to NBTV at NBTV1.com. That cares.
Okay. Let's start dealing with some of this stuff here, and we're gonna open it up here, and let's see here. Make sure I got it right.
Are there strange omens from ancient texts that determine the fate of thriving nations, specifically us? In a moment, Jonathan Kahn joins us as we talk about the Harbinger on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. A year ago, I had Jonathan Kahn on the program as we talked about the Harbinger, and things have changed over a year. Truly a frightening story. He's the author, of course, of that bestseller, The Harbinger. He's an internationally recognized authority on end-time prophecy and leads the Jerusalem Center, the Beth Israel in Wayne, New Jersey. President of the Hope of the World, by the way, which is an international outreach program. Jonathan's teachings, his messages are heard all around the world. Always a pleasure, Jonathan, to have you on. How are you?
Great to be back, George. I'm great.
And you're still doing some work for WND, WorldNet Daily, right?
Yeah, continuously. Yeah.
Super.
Yeah, with Joseph Farah, sure.
Joseph's a great guy.
Yes, and funny, too.
It's funny, and
radical.
He understands. He co-produced with you the DVD part of the Harbinger, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. He did the Isaiah. It's called the Isaiah 9:10 Judgment. And it's kind of the Harbinger in its factual form, with like a documentary form, and it's on DVD. And they told me that's become the number one faith video in the world. So yeah, it's the Isaiah 9:10 Judgment. And it's so people actually are seeing the Harbinger.
And how did the book do over this year?
Well, the book is, you know, when I first spoke with you, it was new. It just came out.
Just came out.
Yeah. It has been on the New York Times bestseller list every week since. It has never left, and it's one of the longest lasting of the New York Times bestsellers on the list. It's gone over a million, and it just keeps spreading. It's gone to Capitol Hill. We've just gotten reports of senators reading it and members of Congress reading it. So it just keeps spreading.
Well, things are happening fast in this year. Not only has the book done well, but this planet has changed dramatically, Jonathan. Have you seen that?
Yeah. I mean, and it's been, there's a lack of, there's a real restlessness, I mean, in America and around the world. People who are into prophecy have been, you know, there's been buzzes over many, many different things we can touch on. But it's, you know, things have not gotten better. You know, it's a continual sense of really foreboding.
I used to hear the old saying, it's a harbinger of things to come. Tell me about the mystery of the Harbinger and how you picked that title.
Yeah, the Harbinger, well, it's the ultimate thing with the Harbinger is, could there be an ancient mystery, 2,500 years old and a bit more going back from the Bible, that actually lies behind everything that's happening in America from 9/11 to the collapse of the American economy, something that's so specific that it actually gives the words that American leaders speak before they say them, I mean, down to the exact words, actually gives exact dates of some of the really most, traumatic events in the last 10 years, down to the hours. And, you know, the ultimate thing is God sending a word. You know, there's this mystery that's in the Bible that happened to ancient Israel, and it's replaying now, and it's replaying kind of eerily and you know, with precision. It's not something just kind of general thing. It's happening, and since the book came out and since we last talked last year, it's actually coming true, and there's more. There's been more happening, and we'll get to it later, but there's more that happening that even kind of shocked me, but it keeps on happening. So it is this mystery that happened in the last days of ancient Israel, and, you know, this is a nation that knew God, was blessed, you know, had prosperity, and then turned away. And as it turned away, there were warnings given, and then these harbingers, or, you know, you know, when you say that, like the title, you know, I didn't realize that a lot of people don't know what the word means. Harbinger is a warning of something to come. It can be a good thing, but usually when you say a harbinger of things to come, often it's a warning. In this case, it's a warning of judgment or warning of destruction. And these are the nine harbingers that appeared in the last days of ancient Israel. And the eerie thing is the same nine harbingers of warning of national destruction and judgment that reappeared in the last days of ancient Israel and then led to destruction are now reappearing on American soil.
I was going to say, they repeat themselves, don't they?
Yeah. I mean, and ways that are, I mean, it's eerie because nobody's trying to do it. I mean, nobody's trying to put it together. I mean, you know, and it's not that, you know, anybody is consciously coordinating this. It's just happening. And some involve inanimate objects. Some involve American leaders. Some have taken place and manifested in New York City. Some of it happened in Washington, D.C. Some have involved the president. So, and some have involved the entire economy and Wall Street, you know, but nobody is trying to put it together. It just, each one of them just happens. As it's kind of like replaying this drama that happened 2,500 years ago, but now in modern America.
Jonathan, can you give us just an overview of these nine harbingers?
Yeah. Well, the first harbinger that happened, the sign in the Bible of, you know, the first warning is when this first strike happens on the land, when the nation's hedge of protection is lifted up temporarily, and this is a warning, and it happens years before, in a sense, the destruction comes. And that happened in Israel. It happened in 732 BC. There was a strike on the land. It was actually a terrorist attack. And it happened, and then it was over, and then the kind of nation hung in the balance. To either it was a wake-up call to come back, to return to God. And with Israel, they didn't. And so here these nine harbingers appear. With America, the day that our national hedge of protection was lifted was 9/11. And this is the beginning. Strange thing, because when that happened, it comes the beginning of the harbingers. One of the harbingers is called the breach. That's that opening strike. The second in overview is the terrorist, and that this is actually literally a terrorist strike or a terrorist happening. The third is the harbinger of the bricks, fallen bricks, and we can get into some of them. The fourth is called the tower, and we'll get into it. The fifth is the stone of judgment. The sixth is called the sign of the sycamore, and another sign of national judgment. The seventh is called the Erez tree, and the eighth is actually a vow that is proclaimed over the nation, and the ninth is a prophecy that's proclaimed. Now, that's just a real, you know, real broad overview, but we can touch on
some
of them.
But,
you know, each one of them have happened, are happening in America.
How do they tie in to the book of Revelation? How do they tie in to end times?
Well, one of the things about the book of Revelation, you know, is that this has touched prophecy people, you know, experts for a long time, is that there's no real clear mention of America. I mean, there are those who have ideas. There are those who look to the signs of, you know, talking about the eagle or Babylon and all that. But there's no real clear mention of America, which what that means is that America cannot be leading, cannot be the head of nations it is now in the last day scenario. And what the harbinger is doing is really kind of connecting the dots of saying what's going to happen between from now and then, where America is going from, you know, still the head of nations to a fall or a collapse, and something that is, you know, following an exact progression that you know, really the steps are all there. I mean, not that there's not a choice, but what it looks like is that, you know, this is the thing that we're, the very events that will go from where we are here to a world without America as the head of nations.
This slippage, can it be stopped? Can we reverse things?
I believe it can, but I mean, I believe there's hope. And people, you know, people say, you know, is there hope for America? And, you know, I say, you know, if there was no hope, I don't believe there'd be any harbingers. And what's the point of warning if there's no hope? Or what's the point of having a, you know, an alarm if there's no hope of saving? That's the whole point of the, you know, of the harbingers and, you know, the whole point of the book, The Harbinger. That's the whole thing. So, yes. Now, if you ask me, if I look at the way it's going in America, I would say, you know, in my own natural thinking, no, it doesn't look like there's a lot of hope because there's a real major slide. At the same time, you know, nothing's impossible with God. So, you know, there can be revival. There can be a turning back. But does it look like it? No. But is there hope? There's always hope.
Jonathan, between the first harbinger, the breach, and the prophecy, the last, how much time is in between?
Well, interesting question because, and this is, you know, we can touch on it, that, you know, since the book, there's still, it's like it's still happening. There's at least two harbingers that are still, in a sense, developing, which I'll share later. But it was a period of several years from 9/11 being the very beginning. And then, you know, and several years, and I'll tell you, because since one of the harbingers is this tower going up at Ground Zero, that's not finished. So technically, it's not even finished. Technically, you're talking 11, 12 years.
So from when it started to where we are, could be another 10 or 12, right? Could be 20.
Well, you mean like till the next thing, the next shoe falls or the next
yeah.
event happens? Well, okay, that's a great question. In the case of ancient Israel, when the first harbinger happened, when the strike happened, till the nation's destruction, it was about 10 or 11 years. The same pattern of this warning and, you know, and then the final thing happened with the nation of Judah, which is also recorded in the Bible. Same pattern, that one was 19 years. So, you know, there's not a formula, but there is a very exact progression. And in both cases, it wasn't relatively really long before that final thing happened. So you have 10 on one hand, or 10 or 11, and you have 19 on the other.
How many civilizations went through harbingers? Just one, the ancient Israelites?
Hard to say, because people have said, you know, is there another case where you have all these things happening? And I have not. I mean, these harbingers. I mean, there's always signs. You know, there's always signs of decay or signs of, you know, a nation heading. I mean, but these particular, almost could say supernatural, because they're so specific and so precise. I have not seen another example so far. I mean, I studied history. I've not seen it so far. Two. One is ancient Israel, and one is America. And I'm open to seeing it. But you know, there are always warning signs. But these specific kind of eerie patterns, no, I haven't seen it
at all.
No. No, not these. Hmm. Not these. Ever. Yeah, I mean, that's the – and I wasn't looking for it, George. I mean, originally. I mean, I wasn't expecting this thing. I wasn't looking for it. I wasn't trying to write a best-selling book or anything. It just – it came. And it was as if the thing had to be written before I ever started typing. And when I started typing and I never wrote a book before, it flowed out as if the book was already written.
Jonathan, these nine harbingers, where did you find them? How did you know about them?
Well, I live across the Hudson. So, you know, when 9/11 happened, I could see it happen.
Oh, yeah.
They could see the smoke. In fact, my wife, she wasn't my wife then, but my wife was supposed to be there at, you know, at that moment, you know, when that was going to happen. And her plans were changed. And same with other people that, you know, the same story happened. A lot of people that I knew were supposed to be there and their plans were changed at the last minute. But I was literally praying in the seeing the smoke and all that. And I was led to this passage in the Bible that speaks specifically about this first warning of a nation of Israel before its destruction. And at that point, I wasn't looking for it. I kind of opened the Bible and it just was led there. But I saw the connection immediately. I didn't see the verse that became the kind of decoder of the harbingers. I didn't see that right away, but that was in that section. There was a guy named David Wilkerson. I mean, he was a famous pastor, and he was in New York City. And that week, he gave a word to his people, and he said, "There's a word that God is giving to America, and about this." And the word he gave was the same exact verse that became the verse of the harbingers. And he didn't see, you know, the harbingers happening. A lot of that happened after. He just got this, like, you know, supernaturally. He said it, And he's the other one I know. But then later, I'm standing at the corner of Ground Zero, and something is directing my focus to an object there, which was this tree. And something said, you have to seek this out. There's something there. And as I did, this thing started opening up, and it became like the first puzzle piece of this mystery that just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger until I was blown away by it, literally. And I shared it to to the people, you know, at the Jerusalem Center. They were blown away by it. And they said, this thing has got to go to the nation. It's a word that has to go. It's not from you, Jonathan. It's just got to go. And then only a little while later did I start writing it. And that's when, you know, again, I don't know how to write. You know, I just started typing, and it literally flowed out.
Let's talk a little bit about revelation in the Bible. Get your interpretation of that first.
The entire book, or the overall?
Just the overall.
Yeah. Well, you know, well, Revelation is focusing on the last part of history. I mean, tribulation period. Some would even say it's the 3.5 year end or kind of half tribulation period. Of the final, the apocalypse. And a lot of people, when they say apocalypse, they don't realize what that means. Apocalypse is another way of simply saying the title of Revelation, which, you know, apocalypse means simply the unveiling. God, you know, there's unveiling of what's happening. And it gives a scenario where Israel is the center of world conflict, which, of course, it is. And that's also, you know, so consistent with Bible prophecy. It speaks of a scenario where, you know, the culture has gone away from God and is, evil is rampant, and where man has the capacity of destruction, you know, mass destruction, and involves, you know, everything from, you know, there are things identified with China and, again, the focus being the Middle East. But the final, you know, cataclysm, and even it also speaks, of course, of a one-world state or one-world culture. And, you know, many of these things we're moving towards, you know, or either we're heading that way if we're not there. But that's why, you know, people are always fascinated with this book, because it's the final thing. But never before have there been things in place like, again, in Israel and others existing after 2,000 years and many of the things that have never been in place that are now there in the 21st century.
Were these prophetic people time travelers, remote viewers? How did they know what they knew?
Well, the Bible says there, you know, God is beyond time and space, and so he is very able to break that barrier that we know and knows the end from the beginning and reveals it. And, you know, you look at these people, you have like a fig tree farmer, Amon. You have a shepherd. You know, there's no way they have any concept on their own to know what's happening. I mean, and, you know, even with our computers, we can't, you know, determine what's going to happen 2 years in advance with human history. But here they're seeing it, and actually that's what first got me. It's the fact that they could see these things, because it was revealed to them not by their knowledge, but by one who was beyond time and space. I was an atheist when I first picked up, you know, a book on prophecy, and that's really what led me to believe, is because there was no way I could explain this away.
There's also science behind it, Jonathan. You know that?
Well, God is the God of, you know, he created science, so yes, absolutely.
I want to get into, of course, some other things, including the mystery ground, when we come back in a moment. We'll go through these 9 steps now a little more specifically. But the book is still available, as you said. So are you writing another one? What's new with you there?
Well, they just came out. The Harbinger's everywhere. Because there's been a real demand of people wanting to get deeper into it, they just came out with a Harbinger Companion, which I help with, obviously. But it's going deeper into the mysteries, and it actually has pictures of the Harbingers and, you know, photographs and maps and charts. You know, it's very real stuff. So it's more the factual part. So that the Harbinger Companion just came out. But that's not a sequel. I do have in my head or in my spirit, a whole, you know, kind of another thing to go with this. But I've been led to hold off right now because, you know, the word, you know, this message is still being digested. It's still going very strong. And I'm feeling I have to wait for the next message before that, you know, until this thing is really fully gone forth.
I think so, too. Why are people so fascinated with prophecy?
Well, we all want to know what's going to happen. You know, everybody, you know, we always want to know what's going to happen. And then there's a real sense, and there's a sense in America, and there was a sense in 9/11, that we are in trouble and we are in danger, and you know where we are heading. And you know, the Bible, you know, gives, you know, exact things on this. And again, that's what won me over. And that's what, you know, I was fascinated with. It was prophecy. You know, so the fact is, when you have something and when it actually comes true, I mean, there's a lot of things where people say things and they certainly don't come true. But when you have something that does, you know, that's, you know, there's something in control of everything. And that's, you know, that's worth more than all the newspapers and all the internet, you know, media in the world.
Jonathan, we're going to come back, talk more about the Harbinger. We'll go through these nine Harbingers when we roll right back on Coast to Coast AM. And you've been invited to watch our television program Beyond Belief, 10 days free to take advantage of watching that and the past programs and also all the many videos that are available. Simply go to GaiamTV.com/George, GaiamTV.com/George, or go to our website, click hosts, and you'll see the TV icon and take advantage of the 10 days free. But you'll really enjoy, based on the comments I get, Beyond Belief. Back in a moment, more with Jonathan Kahn as we talk about the Harbinger, right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Jonathan Kahn. Well, Jonathan, the information you have is just so incredibly important. You've got me on the edge of my chair, literally. And, you know, most of the time I do this interview standing, but, I mean, I'm really at the edge here.
Mm.
Let's talk a little bit about the mystery ground. What is that?
The mystery ground is a principle in the Bible that something that happened concerning ancient Israel, again, that there's a ground of earth where they dedicated Israel to God. It was the Temple Mount. That's where Solomon was up there, and he gathered the nation together, and he prayed for the future, and they dedicated Israel to God. Now, years later, centuries later, finally, when the judgment came, when the destruction came, the destruction returned to the same ground, the Temple Mount, where the nation had been dedicated to God, and it was in ruins, and the message was to the nation, return. You know, you've broken this covenant. Return, return. And so what does that have to do with America? Well, in America, there is a day that parallels this dedication, and it was the first day that America existed as a nation as we know it. It wasn't 1776. It was 1789, and it was the day that Washington became president. For the first time, we had a fully constituted government with a president according to the Constitution, April 30th, 1789. Now, on that day, Washington is sworn in the capital city, and he gives a prophetic warning to America. It's embedded in our first day. And basically what he says is, in effect, is that if America ever turns away from God and the ways of righteousness, it will, the blessings of America will be removed from the land. And we're actually seeing this warning come true. He gives a warning, and then he and the entire government of America, the first cabinet, the first Congress, walk on foot to a place that's appointed to pray and dedicate America and its future to God. So on the very first day of America, the entire government gathers to do this, to dedicate the nation to God. So where was it? Because if we can find that, that is the dedication ground. That's the consecration ground. Where did it happen? Well, it happened in the capital city. But the capital city was not Washington, D.C. The capital of America was New York City. Where in New York City? It was in Lower Manhattan. Where exactly? They went and they dedicated America on a specific spot of ground, and the ground that they dedicated America on was ground zero.
No way.
America was dedicated to God at ground zero.
Amazing.
That is the consecration ground of this nation, and the destruction returned to the same ground as it did in ancient Israel, the same thing, the call to return. And actually, a shockwave.
That is shocking.
Yeah. And actually, I mean, Ground Zero was actually church land. It was part of this church where they dedicated America to God. And this shockwave goes forth on 9/11, and it strikes another place. It strikes Federal Hall, the place where Washington gave the warning. And what would happen if we ever turn away from God? And one of the things he talked about was the removal of protection. And it strikes Federal Hall, which is really the foundation of the government, and puts a crack in America's foundation. So everything, you know, we didn't realize. I mean, the nation was drawn back. You know, our eyes, when zero, we were all drawn back to the place of the consecration where America was dedicated to God, the same biblical principle.
Was this known to the terrorists back at 9/11 time?
No, no. I am sure, I'm convinced that they had no idea. I mean, first of all, they weren't reading the Bible. They might have been reading the Quran. They weren't reading Isaiah, which is the key to the harbingers. So no, they definitely did not. And yet, like everything, George, with everything with this, it's like everybody is replaying this without meaning to. And, you know, nobody could have put all these things together. I mean, you know, the way
no.
it happened.
And no. there are no coincidences. This,
no.
this just doesn't just happen by luck. There's got to be some meaning behind it.
Yeah, absolutely. That is one of the key things in prophecy. Absolutely. And that goes with the other things as well. I mean, for instance, one of the harbingers, I mean, and all the harbingers are kind of, in a sense, decoded by this one verse in Isaiah, which was Isaiah 9:10, which is the verse where Isaiah the prophet is recording what Israel did, how they reacted to this first warning strike, this first really terrorist attack. And the reaction is this one verse where they said, instead of kind of returning and being humble and coming back to God, what they did is they made this vow, and the vow is a vow of defiance. And what they said is, they said, the bricks have fallen in the attack, but we will rebuild with hewn stone. The sycamores have been cut down in this attack, but we will plant cedars in their place. So what they're doing, in effect, they're telling God that, listen, and telling man, we're not going to turn back. We're not going to change our course. We're going to keep on going, and we're going to come back even stronger than before on our own strength and against God. So they're going to continue. And this is ominous because it's going to set the course of their destruction. Well, if you look at that vow that Isaiah records they made, you see the harbingers. And for instance, one of them, it says, the bricks have fallen, but we will rebuild with hewn stone. And what they're saying is, hey, we're going to rebuild stronger than before, and where the bricks fell, we're going to rebuild with these massive stones. The word in Hebrew is gazit stone, which means literally a massive rectangular block of stone that is cut out of the mountain rocks to show, like, we're defiant. We're going to bring it back to where the bricks are, and we're going to show everybody we're going to build higher with these, taller, bigger, and better. So what does this have to do with America? Well, after 9/11, here's what happened. I mean, for this harbinger, this is in the book, it's the fifth harbinger, the Stone of Judgment, is that somehow this gazit stone would have to manifest, and it would have to be linked to 9/11. After 9/11, the people of New York go up to the mountains of New York. They quarry out a massive rectangular block of stone. It's a biblical gazit stone, 20 tons of rock. According to the mystery, this harbinger would have to be brought to the place where the destruction happened, where the bricks fell. They bring it to New York City. They bring it to Ground Zero. They lower the stone down on the pavement of Ground Zero. They have a ceremony around the stone with leaders, American leaders, the mayor, the governors, all there. And what they do is they all pronounce vows of defiance over the stone. So we're going to come back stronger. In fact, you know, if you look at the commentaries on Isaiah 9:10, the commentators will say the nation does this. They lay the stone in the spirit of defiance. They keep using this phrase, spirit of defiance. Well, the governor of New York, he vows over the stone, and he says, we are doing this in the spirit of defiance. And the same exact words.
Same words. How does this happen?
Because it has to happen. I mean, I would say it's not anybody trying to. That's the whole point.
It's, you know, destiny, isn't it?
Yeah. There is this aspect of that. I mean, I have no question. At one point, you could share a story of how the book became a book. I mean, it was just a total destined thing. Absolutely. And that's the thing. It's nobody putting it together. Nobody.
I heard rumors it had something to do with the Super Bowl.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
I have friends in high places.
Yes, I think you're going to like it when I just yes.
Okay.
But I don't even watch sports. I mean, that's really destiny because that. But yeah, and it goes with, you know, and the next thing, when you look down the ancient verse, this oracle, you have, it says, then the sycamores have fallen or been struck down. This is the sixth harbinger. It's a sign of national judgment. And it happens not just there. It happens in other places of the Bible. It's a sign of a nation being uprooted if it doesn't turn back to God. And in this strike that happened on Israel, this warning, the sycamores of the land were uprooted. So they said the sycamores have been struck down. So for this harbinger to manifest, it would mean that somehow that linked to 9/11, the sign of the sycamore struck down would have to be there somehow linked to the strike. The thing is, though, you know, you don't. If you're looking for trees, you don't go to New York City. That's not the first place you go. The terrorists aren't trying to fulfill Isaiah, as you mentioned. They don't know this, and the actual the Hebrew sycamore doesn't even grow in New York City. So what happens though? An eerie thing happens, because for this to happen, it would have to, somehow the sycamore has to manifest. Eerie thing: the last moments of 9/11, as the last tower is coming crashing down, it sends forth a shockwave and a beam, and it strikes an object. And the object it strikes happens to be a tree. The tree happens to be a sycamore. It's the American version of the Hebrew sycamore. It's just happens to be growing at the corner of Ground Zero. The sycamore has fallen, struck down, the sign of biblical judgment or national warning of judgment. They put the sycamore on display in New York City. They have no idea the meaning. They call it the sycamore of Ground Zero. And then the next thing in Isaiah is that it says that it says the sycamores have fallen, but we will plant cedars in their place. And this is another act of defiance where the people are saying, hey, we're not going to be humbled. We're going to take another tree, put it right where the sycamores have fallen, and we're going to show you we're not going to be humbled. And the tree that we're going to put is a stronger tree than the sycamore. And in the Bible, in English, you read cedars. We'll replant the sycamore with cedars. But in Hebrew, the word is erez. And erez can be a cedar, but it also can be a spruce. It means a pine or panacea evergreen tree. Well, what does this have to do with America? Because for this to happen, this is the seventh harbinger, there would have to be an act, almost like a ritual, of replacing the fallen sycamore with another tree that has to match up with a biblical tree. And so what happens? 2 years after 9/11, a tree appears in the sky at the corner of Ground Zero, and it's being lowered down by crane to get into an exact spot of earth. And the earth that they're putting it in is the exact spot where the sycamore of Ground Zero stood. They are performing an ancient, really Hebrew act of replacing one tree with another kind. They put it down. They have a ceremony around the tree. They call it the Tree of Hope. It's a sign of, again, we're going to rise up stronger. And what kind of tree is it? Well, the tree that comes down is a panacea tree. That's the definition. It's a pine tree. It's a erez tree. It's the same tree of judgment that was in Isaiah in the sign of the harbingers. And nobody, George, was trying to do that, because somebody just donated the tree. That the terrorist could not have aimed for that sycamore. I mean, everything just falls.
How bizarre! Now, did you hear the story about President Obama's tree in Israel?
Tell me.
He brought a magnolia tree for Shimon Peres. They had it planted at Peres's residence in Israel. And as soon as the president moved on, they uprooted the tree check it for pests.
Is that a joke?
They say it's going to be returned if it passes the tests. It could take months.
Boy.
It's bizarre. The tree will be dead by then.
Oh, my goodness.
But again, you're talking about a tree. Here we are.
Well, yeah, and in the Bible, and we're going to see one of them when we get into the next part about really also what's happened since, that the tree is actually very significant as a symbol of a nation in the Bible. So it is very significant, and you have two right here. And then it gets even more eerie because this is what stunned me, because when I was being led, when I was standing at Ground Zero, I was immediately led to Isaiah 9:10. But I had no idea what was going to happen at the end of this when kind of this stunned me. And that is the eighth harbinger is that a leader of the land has to actually make this vow that was made. Because unless the leaders did it, it's not going to determine where the nation's going. The leaders are significant.
They have to say it.
Yeah, and so it had to be said by leaders, and it had to be said in the capital city, because that's where they would have said it, made it pronouncing. But so here's the harbinger. The eighth harbinger is the vow that it would have to be an American leader representing America would have to make this exact vow, a vow of defiance, pronouncing judgment on America, and do it linked to 9/11 and in the capital city. But what American leader in the right mind is going to pronounce judgment on America? Certainly not one who's running for president or running for office. Well, 3 years after 9/11, on the anniversary of 9/11, an American leader, very famous Senator John Edwards, gets up in the capital city on September 11th, and this is the third anniversary, and he's before a congressional caucus. He gets up and out of his mouth comes the ancient vow of pronouncing judgment on America. He says, this is the word for us. And he, out of his mouth, he says the same exact words that the leaders of ancient Israel said that led to their destruction. And he speaks, the bricks have fallen, but we will rebuild. With just the whole thing. I mean, and I got to tell you, George, this was not a famous verse. And in fact, almost, you know, even Bible students didn't know this verse. Out of 30,000 verses, he says the verse that's pronouncing judgment on America and linking it to 9/11, and the verse is about an attack, and he's saying it, and not only does he say it, but he builds his entire speech around it. He goes on to say, we're putting up the cedars, and we're the sycamores fell. He has no idea that actually he's speaking of all the harbingers and has no idea that they're actually real. I mean, he's speaking figuratively. They're actually real. And it gets even more intense because – you know, the day after 9/11, when most of us were in shock, you know, we didn't know this happened, that the American government gathered on Capitol Hill to give the nation's response to the world. And so they gather, the Senate, the House, and one man is appointed to give the nation's response. And that is Tom Daschle, because he's the Senate Majority Leader, and the Senate is representing the nation. He's representing the Senate. He gets up on the floor. And he says he gives the nation's response. So this is very critical because when it happened with Israel, the response was recorded by Isaiah. It became a matter of national record and prophetic. So here, America's going to give the response. So he gets up on the podium, and before the entire U.S. Congress, he gives the response. And at the crescendo of his speech, he says there is a passage in the Bible from Isaiah that I think speaks to all of us at times like this. And then out of his mouth on the Senate floor, the floor of the House, he says, he pronounces the ancient vow of judgment. The bricks have fallen. We will rebuild. He speaks of the tree that is struck down. He doesn't even realize there's an actual tree that's just being discovered that day. He speaks of the stone of judgment that's going to go off. That's going to happen 3 years after. It's like prophecy. He speaks of the replacing of the one tree with it. He speaks of all the harbingers. He has no idea what he's saying.
And it sounds like all the harbingers have been met, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, yeah, and except, yes, and they're continuing, yes. And here's the very day after 9/11, and it's like he's prophesying it. And, you know, you speak about prophecy, and, you know, we're speaking about, like, you know, predestination and how does this happen? Well, here's someone, he doesn't even realize what he's doing. And people say, well, how can he do that, you know, if that's the case? Well, interesting, because in the Bible, there's an example of Caiaphas, you know, who's a leader,
yeah.
And he says something. He says there's one man who has to die for the nation. And literally, the Bible says he didn't know what he was saying, but he was prophesying of basically the death of Jesus. And he doesn't know what he's saying, but it has like a double meaning. And so it says he did this because he was in the office. He represented – it's like he represented the people. Same thing with Daschle. It's an unwittingly prophetic statement from Capitol Hill. He represented the Senate. So it's an eerie thing that people can even speak prophetic things without realizing what they're doing. And it would come true. That's the thing. What Daschle said would come true because a lot of people – we thought – like after with 9/11, people were flocking to pray, and we thought, well, maybe there's a revival, but there wasn't, and it was all sealed in a sense on that day on the floor, and it became now the ancient response of Israel to its attack has now become the response of America, and that sealed the destruction in Israel, and it's part of the annals of Congress. It's right there. If you look there, you'll find Isaiah 9:10.
Amazing story, Jonathan. Truly amazing. Stay with us. Going to come back. We'll talk more about prophecy. It's the Harbinger. Later on tonight, we'll take your phone calls right here on coasttocoastam.com. You know, to me, it sounds like most of these harbingers have already been met. I'm George Norrie. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And we're talking about prophecy, the Harbinger with Jonathan Kahn, and we'll come back and talk more in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast, Jonathan Kahn with us. Jonathan, as we look at these various signs that are out there, are you convinced the clock has started?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In when this pattern happened in the Bible, I mean, it was like a clock with that first warning strike was really the opening of the clock, you know, and was the moving forward of it. Once it happens, it's, you know, there's a progression. And the progression, if you look at, you know, there's old commentaries in the Bible that say this, that give the same thing. There's a progression. And we, as America, are moving from the progression from 9/11, because the harbingers aren't the end of the story. They're really like the beginning of it. And they're moving from the first shaking to a second shaking. And so, yes, it's kind of, there is a progression, and not to give formulas about how long that is, but the progression is there, and it starts with that moment. Absolutely. And it's more than once in the Bible, and that's what we're witnessing now.
Okay. Now, are our leaders, Democrats, Republicans, are they destroying America?
Yes.
Putting it
not,
simply,
not that,
right?
And I'm not speaking about everyone, and I'm not saying, you know, that this is a willing thing, or I mean necessarily that people are meaning to, but you know, if the leaders have a real responsibility, and when you look at the destruction of Israel, which is the pattern, the leaders made a big difference, you know, in that they are, you know, determining the course of the nation. And if they determine the course of a nation away from the ways of God, the ways of blessing, then they are inadvertently leading the nation to destruction. Absolutely.
Let's talk about the economy and some of the signs that you see. You call it the second shaking.
Yeah. And here is the pattern. Here is, in a sense, the clock and the progression. That the first shaking is, you know, is something that is a physical thing. It touches buildings, literally. The second is going to literally strike at American power itself. And the pattern in the Bible, and the pattern that, you know, of judgment in a nation, is, and you see it again and again, is that if the first shaking does not, you know, wake up the nation, does not lead it back, then there will be a second shaking. There will come a second. I mean, there's a host of commentaries on Isaiah 9:10 that say that's exactly what the progression is, and that's what's happening. And so here we have the second shaking that comes, and you know, we left off where we were standing on Capitol Hill, in a sense, on the day after 9/11, and we see this leader pronouncing this vow. Well, it's about 7 years later. The government, and this kind of goes with what you just said, the government rushes to New York City, the Treasury, emergency meeting, and they meet with the leaders of Wall Street, and they make a decision, and the decision is going to actually trigger the collapse of the American economy. They come at the weekend. When the weekend's over, the entire economy is going to be crashed, including the world economy. And it's a decision that they made on that Friday. And interesting, because when they made that really fateful decision where this kind of house of cards collapsed, it was the anniversary of a particular day. It was on the anniversary, the seventh anniversary of the day that the vow of Isaiah was proclaimed from Capitol Hill. They make that decision, and it crashes the economy. And actually, you know, there's a biblical principle that even the first of shaking causes the second. We won't try to go into it, but actually the seeds of this economic collapse, and we're still in the shadow of this, the seeds of it were actually sown at 9/11 and in response to it. And there's a whole kind of stream of biblical, you know, mysteries and keys in this. I can touch on just some. One is called the Buttonwood mystery, and that is this, that there's a pattern, and there's a key in Scripture that when a nation is under judgment, that God says, the Scriptures say, I will lay bare the foundation. I will expose it. In other words, the thing which the nation rests on will be exposed. Its power will be exposed. Kind of like a house being brought down to the foundation. Well, what was the foundation of America's financial superpower? It happened in the 1700s. There was a secret meeting in New York City among the merchants of New York City, and they got together, and they formed something. They signed a covenant, and the covenant was called the Buttonwood Agreement. And what that was is that was the beginning of Wall Street as we know it. The Buttonwood Agreement formed the Buttonwood Association. The name was later changed to the New York Stock Exchange, but originally it was called the Buttonwood Association. And why was it called Buttonwood? Because it was signed, the covenant was signed under a particular tree. This was the beginning of America's rise to superpower as we know it, financial, and the beginning of Wall Street. So here, what was this buttonwood? The buttonwood, this tree, was a particular kind. It was the sycamore tree. And so here you have the symbol of the sycamore tree. The beginning of America's rise to financial superpower happened under the sign of a living sycamore tree. On 9/11, the symbol of the sycamore tree reappears, but in a different form. It's struck down. And here is the symbol in the Bible. If a living tree marks the beginning of America's rise to financial superpower, what does a struck down sycamore tree mean? And after 9/11, they take that sycamore and they make it into a statue. And they take the statue and they put it not on Ground Zero, but they put it on a different street. They put it on the end of Wall Street. So if you go there today in Wall Street, you'll find this symbol of this uprooted sycamore. Now, remember, Wall Street is named after – Wall Street really, it means, you know, buttonwood is another name for it, is the sycamore place. It's the Sycamore Association. And here you go there and you find a symbol of a dead sycamore, uprooted sycamore tree. What does it foreshadow? In the Bible, these are biblical symbols, foreshadows the fall of American superpower.
It's amazing. Amazing tie-in.
Yeah, and it and even more. Now this one, you know, this one was stunned me. I mean, and that is this thing called the Shemitah, or in the book it's called the Mystery of the Shemitah, and
that sounds Hebrew.
Yeah, it almost sounds Yiddish, Shemitah, but yes, it's Shemitah, and people, you know, there are Bible students who know that. From what basically, you know, everybody knows about the Sabbath day, but every seventh year was a Sabbath year, and that the name of that was the Shemitah. And so every seventh year they had a rest, no buying, no selling of the fruits of the land, no, you know, it, basically this economic cessation. And it was supposed to be a blessing. It's a Sabbath year, you know. There was one thing that happened on the last day of this Sabbath year, and it was the last day. It was called Elul 29, and this was the final day of the Shemitah when all the nation's debt is wiped away, the credit, people's credits are wiped away, the financial accounts are wiped clean of the nation. Now, it's supposed to be a blessing, but the thing is, when Israel turned away from God, this blessing comes back at them as a sign of national judgment. It becomes, in a sense, a curse. When Israel was later taken into captivity, called the Babylonian captivity, the land would lay rested. They would be there for 70 years for the years of the Shemitah that they didn't rest. So this Shemitah becomes this sign of national judgment of a nation that is turning away from God, driving him out of its life, and putting money ahead of God. And it specifically strikes a nation's financial realm. Now, what does it have to do with America? Well, America's not under the law, but as a sign, here's where it comes. The key of the Shemitah, keep in mind, is this seven-year cycle, and also this day called Elul 29 when the financial realm was wiped out. So now we talked about the first shaking, and we talked about the second shaking. The first shaking is 2001. The second shaking is 2008. That's a seven-year cycle.
That's right.
Between the two. When did the collapse of the economy happen? Happened in the month of September. That's 7 years to the month of 9/11. When exactly? It happened on the second week of September. That's 7 years to the week of 9/11. When America was commemorating 9/11, the seventh anniversary, on Wall Street, the second shaking was being set in motion. And it gets more exact and amazingly exact, because what was the greatest day of the collapse? And it actually was the greatest collapse in Wall Street or American history. And that morning, George, when they opened up, they rang the bell, and the bell would not ring. Even Wall Street took it as an omen.
Yeah.
The entire collapse there, the greatest collapse. So when did the greatest collapse of American history
happen? And now look at it.
What was it?
Now look at it. It's over.
Yeah.
It's going through the roof.
Yeah, well, it's now there's several years later. Yeah, and that's another thing.
Until 2015.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So here is the greatest crash happened at the end of September. And the thing is, as it did, when did it happen? It happened, the greatest collapse happened on the biblical day of the Shemitah, the day appointed to strike the nation's financial realm in the Bible, the exact day, down to the exact hours, the last day of this seven-year cycle the exact day, and here the financial realm is wiped, the accounts are wiped, the Great Recession begins, and all this, and then if you go back 7 years, I mean, because it's a seven-year cycle, from that, from the very day of the greatest collapse in American history, go back 7 years, and you'll find it brings you to September 2001. You got 9/11, but you have something else. You have something. You have the other greatest collapse in American history, and the other greatest collapse up to that day happened in September, September 17th, and that's 7 years just about. But if you strip away the Western calendar, because the mystery here in the Bible, Shemitah is based on the lunar Hebrew calendar, strip it away, the other greatest collapse in American history happened on the exact same biblical day of the Shemitah, the day appointed to strike the realm, financial realm of a nation that is driving God out of its life, and that wipes away the financial account. So the two greatest collapses, I mean, nobody could have put this together. I mean, nobody. I was stunned when I saw this because, you would think that the economist or somebody would say something or know this. They each happened on the exact same biblical day. They each happened 7 years apart, according to this mystery. They happened 7 years to the day and to the hours apart. And not only that, you know, only one of these days, this Elul 29 days, you know, in 7 years can be the actual day. Well, both of them, each of them happened on the once in 7 year day. So in Israel, you had Orthodox Jews who were commemorating this day, symbolically, you know, wiping out their accounts, while all across the world from Wall Street, the accounts of the world were being wiped out, starting with Wall Street. And so, you know, nobody on earth could have put that together because, you know, it involves every transaction. And this went down to the biblical hours. I mean, this is and it's absolute fact. And the other thing is that there's a strange thing because, you know, the sign of the Shemitah, this is all revolves around the seventh year, the number seven. Well, interesting thing. Could there be, like, fingerprints of this kind of mystery here? And if you look at the crash of 2008 and on that day, and you find the crash, how much of Wall Street was wiped out? 7% was wiped out.
Which is
7.
Huge.
How much? Yeah. And how many points were wiped out? It was 777, the sign of the seventh. And when you go back to 2001, how much was wiped out? 7%, the exact same number. In fact, I mean, I'll share something that's not in the book, but, you know, just for, you know, what it's worth. But interesting, because if you take the moment of that 777 in that greatest crash when it's all finished, and you go back 7 years, you know, we already said it takes you to the exact crash, the other crash, to biblical years. Then you go back 7 days from that, you know, the 24-hour periods, and it'll bring you to 9/11. It'll, if you go from one period, you know, one, from the sundown to sundown, it brings you to the Hebrew day 9/11. And if you go from the close of this is 4 o'clock and the crash, go down 7 hours, it brings you to the hour of 9/11.
So let's talk about 7 years from now.
Well, that's the question, and you know, it's, you know, people ask what's going to happen, and the next Shemitah happens in 2015. Actually, the Shemitah year happens 2014 to 2015. The culmination is 2015. Now, people ask, does it have to happen like this? And I haven't been led to say something has to happen, but I would say have your eyes open for this. And the other thing is that when I did look back, you know, even before this, when I went back into American history from the time of the Harbingers back, there is a parallel. I mean, there is something on many of these 7 years where you have the economic, you know, plunge in some way. Now, there's no period where you have it so exactly as what you have with 2001 and with 9/11 and then the economic collapse. I mean, that's there's nothing like that. So for that reason, I can't say it, but I can say I think it would be wise to watch.
Be careful. Watch. So what are the signs, Jonathan, when we get close, that which means we've got about a year and a half, maybe less, but what are the signs that we can see that we would be able to say, uh-oh, it's happening again?
Okay, and again, you know, I haven't been dogmatic about that. It has to, but well, I would say that, you know, I mean, one is, you know, if at that point you see this boom in Wall Street, which we're seeing, you know, in a sense.
And we're seeing
bubble, another bubble, or, you know, a house of cards. And, you know, at the same time, seeing the, you know, the signs in the financial sector, that which is what we saw in this first one, was really like a house of cards where things were just not lining up, you know, including the debt. I mean, which is, by the way, George, you know, one of the very clear signs literally laid out in the Bible of a nation under judgment is a nation under the shadow of debt.
Yes.
And that's another sign of this whole thing. and which has mushroomed, and we went from the greatest creditor nation to the greatest debtor nation, you know. And so, you know, all these things, when you, if you see the volatility, if you see the you know, the imbalance in, you know, what is looking like a boom, and yet all these signs that we saw in this first collapse, I would say you know it takes some steps if that's the case.
And you know, if it's two for two, why can't we just simply believe then it'll be three for three?
It could be. It absolutely could be. The only thing is, the only thing that stops me from being dogmatic,
you don't seem too confident it's going to happen again.
Well, it could very well. The only thing the only thing is, I know that God doesn't, you know, just when you think there's a formula, God does something else, you know. But the other thing is that it's happened. It happened based on, in American history, I've seen this pattern, but it's exact when you come to 9/11. This, it could very well. I just don't want to, you know, put something more than, you know, I want to say be aware of it, but I don't want to be dogmatic, you know, because God has a way of getting out of boxes.
Well, that's true too. And yeah. And you say that this has happened every 7 years since 9/11. Had it happened every 7 years prior to 9/11?
Well, when I looked at it, I actually saw that there is a. You know, parallel. One of these years goes to 87, where you had the crash under Reagan. You had this crash. Then you go back and you go to 80. You have another recession. Go back, you have 73, another recession. You know, so I do see a pattern there, but nothing is as exact or precise amazingly, as what you saw in the last. You know, the last years where the greatest crashes happened down to the hours. I mean, that's why I hold back from being nomadic. But it's there's something there.
What are the blue moons? Blood moons.
The blood moons are, and now this is not from me or the Harbinger, but you know, to mention it, that the blood moons are that there are those who have looked at the Book of Revelation, and it talks about, you know, the sun will be turned to darkness, the moon to blood before the great day of the Lord.
Right.
And also in Revelation it says the earth, the moon became like blood. So there are those who have looked at that and they say, well, the blood moons appear during the eclipse of the moon. And so what they did is they found, when they looked through NASA, they found that there's only a few times in history where you get this kind of cluster of lunar eclipses and solar eclipses. And also when they appear on Hebrew holidays. And so, you know, one of these years was 1492, which is a very significant year for America and for Jewish history. Another one was 1948, which is certainly the rebirth of Israel. That's also significant. And another one was 1967, which is Jerusalem. So all these things are prophetic. Now, it did happen three other times when it's kind of harder to kind of correlate that. But the question is, when's the next one? Well, the next one is the year 2015.
Yep, here we are again.
Yeah, so that kind of, you know, and again, I'm not being dogmatic with this, and this is, you know, this is another thing that's not the Harbinger, but it does kind of correlate that it does go to that 2015. So, again, I'm not saying it, but interesting that, right. that's when you see it again.
All right, stay with us, Jonathan. More to come right here on Coast to Coast AM. Jonathan Kahn, the Harbinger on Coast to Coast AM. And you know, on Wednesdays, we sound off. As a matter of fact, you can too. Send your sound off to editorial@coasttocoastam.com. Make it about a minute, put your name and phone number in there, and we might call you to record your sound off.
This is Martin from Maryland, and this is my sound off. All around the world, there is a group of people, men and women, who are controlling things behind the scenes. You can call them the elders, the Illuminati, or the New World Order elites. But whatever you call them, these are the people who really control things behind the curtain. They are the big money people. They decide and decry the fate of nations. They have billions of dollars. They are the money elite. They decide if the stock market goes up or down. They decide which countries get aid and which ones don't. That decides whether those countries join the first world or wallow in poverty. They put leaders in power and promote ideas in the media that they want people to believe. So if you're ever wondering what's happening in the world, who's in control, just know in cities flip the elders around tables smiling as they control world events from their hidden chairs of power. This is Martin from Maryland, and that was my sound off.
And welcome back to Coast, Jonathan Kahn with us, of course, and we're talking about his work, The Harbinger. So you are convinced that we are in end times, that this clock is ticking, Jonathan.
Absolutely. The Bible gives very clear signs. You know, one is that when you see Israel come back into the world, that's the first. That's another, in a sense, starting of the clock. When you see Jerusalem back in the hands of Israel, another one. When you see man's knowledge increasing, these are all biblical prophecies. Man's capacity to destroy the world. When you see a moral decay or apostasy on the scale we're seeing it, again and again, and several things. I mean, also deals with, you know, Europe and China and all these things in biblical prophecy. But that was the first thing, George, and I was an atheist. You know, when I was 8 years old, I became an atheist. So it was biblical prophecy where I just could not argue it was coming true.
8 years old, you're an atheist?
Yeah. I was raised in a synagogue. I'm Jewish by birth. I believe in Messiah, Jesus now. But the thing is, I didn't see the power of God. You know, I heard about God moving and speaking and to the prophets and all, but I didn't see it there. So I became an atheist when I was 8, and then when I was about 12, I said, you know, this atheism doesn't work. There's got to be a reason. There's got to be more. So I started seeking every kind of book on everything from UFOs to Nostradamus to religion to science. And one day I picked up a book that, you know, turned out to be The Late Great Planet Earth by Hal Lindsey,
mm-hmm.
which is all about prophecy and all the prophecies of the Bible were coming true. So, you know, it turned my head on this. I started telling my friends about it, and I started watching their lives were changing because of what I was telling them, but I knew I wasn't right with God. And so, you know, I was a teenager. I had a rock band and, you know, the whole bit. And so, I knew it was right, but, you know, I knew I had to follow God and give my life and get right, but I didn't want to do it because I thought, you know, you become a monk and that's the end of your life. So I made a deal with God. I said, God, if you give me a long life, I'll accept you when I'm on my deathbed. So what happened was right after that, I almost got killed twice. And the second time, I was on a Ford Pinto crossing a train track at night. And, you know, I saw this light. It didn't look like it was moving because it was the train coming head on. I wanted to make sure there was nothing, you know, there was no train. And I'm literally on the track. And I thought, maybe I'm too close. Maybe I should back up. So I tried to back up, but now there are headlights in back of me. So I back up about a foot. But I thought it was fine. But I was in the path of the train. The train came, plowed into the Ford Pinto, became like aluminum foil. And I just called out to God. And at that moment, the car was demolished, and I didn't get a scratch. So I said, okay, God, you're getting my attention. And, you know, can we renegotiate that deal? You know, so I said, okay, you know, I'll accept you now when I'm 20. So on my 20th birthday, you know, like a man who's, because I thought I was going to get killed. You know, on my 20th birthday, I went up a mountain, didn't know what I was doing, went up a mountain, knelt down, and said, Lord, I'm yours. And that's how it began.
That changed your life, didn't it?
Yeah. Absolutely. I thank God for that train. You know, without that train, I don't think I would be where I am.
These events that begin to unfold are uncanny. They're predictive. Why, though, are they in these symbols, like the sign of the sycamore, the stone of the judgment?
Yeah.
Why are they in you know, hidden away like that?
Well, I think, you know, if in the Bible, God uses symbols again and again and again. And by the way, nobody's asked me that question, but it's a biblical answer because God always uses these. They're called prophetic signs. I mean, he calls, for instance, the prophets to take a clay jar and smash it, or he says, look at this tree and look at it wither, you know. And so he uses these prophetic signs all the time because, on one hand, they're very, you know, they kind of mark things, you know, they kind of burn in your mind once you see them. And at the same time, it's open, just like the parables, you know, if your mind, your heart's open, you see it. If not, you don't, you know. And so he always speaks in this way in the Bible. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, I wasn't looking for anything. I mean, I just kept, you know, stunning me. And after The Harbinger came out, it continues to happen, and where there are things that happen, and my friends, my wife told me something. I said, I don't believe it, you know, and I wrote it. One of the things that, and talk about it like being the principle of predestination or the principle of also making something obvious, I didn't realize this. This is after we spoke last year, is I found out that millions of Americans were actually shown this connection that was in the Harbinger before I even wrote the book, and I had no idea. There's something called the 1 year Bible, and that is where every day you have a kind of section of the scripture to read. So every day has a date. Now it's been out. The 1 year Bible is famous. It comes out in King James, all the different versions of the Bible. And if you go, and anybody listening right now can do this, if you go to any 1 year Bible called the 1 year Bible, it doesn't matter what version, but open up to Isaiah 9:10, the Harbinger scripture, you know, this key thing. You open it up. If you look at the top of the page, a date will appear. The date will be September 11th in every 1 year Bible.
Uncanny.
Yeah. Every 1 year Bible. All across America, George, people, millions of Americans, on September 11th every year were opening up to Isaiah 9:10, the Harbinger scripture, and it was identifying, this is about the first strike, it was identifying it as September 11th, the first strike of attack on the land, warning of judgment, all the things of the Harbinger was all identified to millions of Americans as September 11th, and it came out before 9/11. So this was there for years, identifying in every Bible that 9/11 was the beginning, was the strike. All these things were there. I had no idea of it. And the only reason I found out was that after the Harbinger came out, we got flooded on September 11th with people saying, do you know what's in this Bible? Because for the first time they saw it because of that. So, you know, God can make something obvious, and yet you don't see it.
No, not at all. Tell us about the mystery of the three witnesses. What is that?
Well, yeah, one of the principles in the Bible is that when judgment is decreed or sealed, it says two or three witnesses. That's in the Old Testament and the New Testament. It must be two or three witnesses of judgment. Now, here, or the connection with Isaiah 9:10, not even counting what I just said, but an American leader giving this pronouncement of America as under judgment, we saw it with Tom Daschle. That was on the day after 9/11. That's the first witness. Then we saw 3 years later on the anniversary, we saw it with John Edwards, the same thing, and each of them pronouncing Isaiah 9:10 linked to 9/11, not knowing what they were doing. But could there be a third witness? And the answer is yes. And the third witness is the President of the United States, is Barack Obama. And that is, in his first major speech, really his first speech as president, he goes to Congress. This is in the midst of the second shaking now, and that's why he goes there. And if you look at the vow of Isaiah 9:10, and you look at what the commentaries, how they put it together, how they sum it up in modern English, the way they sum it up is simply this. So if you're sycamores and cedar, but to put it in our lingo, it's simply this. Number one, we will rebuild, the nation's saying, and number two, we will come back stronger than before. Barack Obama gets up there, and he gives a speech, and he makes the center of his speech is, he's talking about the economy, it's kind of a strange thing to say about the economy. He says, we will rebuild, we will come back stronger than before. America, he says the same thing that doesn't really go with the economy, yet all over the world, it goes, the words, we will rebuild, which is the central declaration of Isaiah 9:10, makes the headlines, sums up the speech all over the world. If you had typed into the internet before, you typed in the word simply, we will rebuild, on the first page of results, you would have gotten Isaiah 9:10. That's how much those three words are linked to that ancient vow. But once the president started speaking, his words start all over the world on the internet started replacing the words of the ancient Israelites. It literally took over the word, literally replaced it the same way all over the world. So three witnesses, when you talk about something sealed, and even though there's hope, but it's two or three. And the other thing, George, is something happened with the president since the book came out that's linked to this, and that's what stunned me when my wife told me. And it's linked to the Harbinger that we haven't really, kind of really gone into, which is the tower. And that is, that the fourth harbinger in the book is this structure that rises. The Israelites say after this attack, say we will rebuild and with stronger. And what they're saying is we're going to build bigger, higher,
bigger,
taller.
Better. You name it.
Exactly, and taller is part of it because you can build taller with these big stones. And so what happens is the nation embarks on this rebuilding campaign on the ground of destruction. So now we've got ground zero, and in one of the ancient translations of the Bible, it's called the Septuagint. It's the first one ever made. It's in Greek. The New Testament quotes from it. When they got to Isaiah 9:10, these ancient rabbis, they did an interesting thing. It says, the bricks have fallen, we will rebuild with hewn stone. But what they did is it says, the bricks are fallen. They said, come, let us build for ourselves a tower. So they're speaking about a tower rising on the ground of destruction. So now, literally, a tower is rising on the ground of destruction. This is the harbinger that is continuing right now. Rising up, this tower that's going to be the symbol of America coming back stronger, but, you know, in this spirit of defiance. And the thing is that where they got that from is they quoted the Tower of Babel, Genesis 11, where they were saying, come, let us build a tower. And you see, like in end-time prophecy, you see that Babylon is very, very clear. That comes from the Tower of Babel. So they're linking these two things together. So the only two places in the ancient translation you'll find the statement is Genesis 11, Tower of Babel, and Isaiah 9:10, the Harbinger Scripture. Now, there's something I didn't know when I wrote the book, even though I put the figure of the Tower of Babel, and that is there was actually a scripture hidden in Ground Zero. And this didn't make the news for some reason, but it was hidden there. There was a Bible that was there in the ruins. It was blown apart, and there's one page left. And a photographer goes into the ruins, and he's one of the official photographers, and he takes a picture, and then they kind of whisk him out because of danger. He goes and he looks at what he took, and he literally starts weeping. And I spoke to the man to confirm this. He's weeping as he reads it. What was the scripture that was hidden in Ground Zero? The scripture was, come, let us build for ourselves a tower. The same scripture of Babel, of the building of a tower, and of Isaiah 9:10 in the ancient translation. The very thing, that's what was hidden. And this year, since I wrote the book, since the Harbinger came out, the tower is continuing to rise, and everybody's waiting. When is it going to break the barrier and become the tallest building again, surpassing the Empire State Building in New York City? And it happened on April 30th, and there was news all over the country focused. Interesting, because in the Harbinger, the date is already given. April 30 is already given in the Harbinger as the date linked to Ground Zero. And then the president, this is probably 3 months after we spoke last year, the president goes down to Ground Zero, and he sees this tower, and they show him a beam. And the beam is going to be the final, you know, closing on the Harbingers, on the tower. I mean, the last thing up there. And they sit him down, and they say, you know, write some words. Now he can write anything he wants. And remember the paraphrase of Isaiah 9:10 in English form, American modern, is, we will rebuild, we'll come back stronger. The president takes out his pen, writes on the beam of the Harbinger, he writes, we rebuild, we come back stronger. The same words that the commentaries use to translate Isaiah 9:10. He writes it on the beam. It's going to be the highest words in America when it gets up there at the top. And when you look at the ancient vow of Israel that brought destruction, it was in Hebrew, it's only 8 Hebrew words that brought destruction to Israel. The president adds 2 words on that beam, so it ends up being 8 English words of the vow, and they even match up. I mean, eerily, like word for word. I mean, so it keeps on continuing. The signs of the judgment and warning keep on happening.
These synchronicities that are out there, and there are obviously many. You've talked about them here. Why do they happen?
Well, I believe, without any question, God's in charge of everything. You know, I mean, every event, you know, he's in charge of. And number one. And number two, that's how he shows, you know, in a sense, the hand or a message in it. You know, when the temple of Jerusalem was destroyed in 70 A.D., it was destroyed on the exact same day by the Romans that had been destroyed by the Babylonians, you know, centuries before. Now, nobody was planning it. I mean, the Babylonians weren't around anymore. They were gone. So how did it happen? Why does it happen like that? You know, why did these things happen? You know, why did most of the things that happened with Jesus happen on Hebrew holy days? Why? Because it's showing you a sign. It's really the sign of God behind all these things, and that there's a purpose. And that even goes with, you know, what I'll tell you something that happened. I mean, this is, I mean, dramatic, and in my own life, and linked to this, is that, you know, I mentioned how this thing even became a book. In the Bible, how does God get a word out? I mean, he always does it by his hand. If he's getting a word out to a nation, he does it in a dramatic way. Well, in the book, when I wrote The Harbinger, it's done in the form of, even though it's all fact, but it's framed in a narrative about a prophet who is revealing these mysteries through these nine seals. And so, and it begins with, in a sense, a man sits down in a public place, and to his left is this prophet who turns to him, starts talking, then he prophesies over him. He's going to lead the man to write a book that's going to give a prophetic word to America. Okay, that's the stage. Now, a few years ago, there was a Super Bowl. And people who are into the Super Bowl know that it was called the greatest play in Super Bowl history. A man named David Tyree, and he, New York Giants, he jumps up into the air, he catches this ball, pins it to his helmet in midair, gets tackled, changes the game, the greatest play in Super Bowl history. What people don't know, the story kind of behind the story, is that David Tyree is a passionate Christian, and he was praying that he always wanted to, you know, spread the word, and before he went into that game, he was given a prophecy, a prophetic word. And he went in that game knowing that something was going to happen that was going to bring him into the spotlight, and even the idea of making this catch. So he was in that game. People don't know the story behind the story. He was in the game with a supernatural thing. More than one person had given him this prophecy that this was going to happen. So he ended up, it happened. He wrote a book. And he mentioned the guy who gave him the prophecy. Okay, now...
Hold on for a second. Let's let you finish that story, Jonathan, when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, when we come to the end of the broadcast, I hope we all got something out of here. I've been your host, Tahaka Amani El Bay, and we'll probably be back Tuesday night, and we'll be dealing with relationships, so make sure that you tune in then, okay? And it's been some very, very interesting information. And you all can listen to this broadcast over. There's much, much more to come. And we'll be bringing it to you at a later date. But we've come to the end of the show. I'm sorry. We have 3 hours, and that's all we can do. So until next time.
Died when I was 4. They were trapped in a fire way up on the 14th floor. So my loving granny raised me till I reached the age of 10. But the good Lord took up to and left my dog just my only friend. Oh, baby, seems like the odds are against me. Nothing right now, right for me. I lost everything I've an orphan home to college. Now I'm found true love in you. I bet you and me were married, but your folks did not approve. Oh, baby, they like the odds against me. Nothing right that's right for me. When we came face to face, you didn't lie.
run up.